using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Tuesday, the 23rd of November, year of our Lord, 2021, day 617 of the emergency. And let me tell you, this truly is an emergency now, as we see what is happening in Australia, and they've been leading this, as Australia and Austria. Austria is now saying that by February the 1st, they're going to have true vaccine mandates. You will get it or you'll be fined several thousand dollars. Now, this comes after removing you from the public place, removing you from your job. Now they're going to ramp this up. And the next stage of this tyranny is also happening in Australia. The final stage, the prison camps. We'll be right back. Stay with us. You know, as Fauci said from the very beginning of this, we're going to do it from the inside. We're going to do it disruptively and iteratively. What are they going to do? Well, that was in response to a question that was asked him. How do we skip this 10 years of testing? We got to make some money off of this stuff. You know, we're losing a lot of time when we got that patent there. That's just burning up cash all the time. Just sitting there, we can't use it. You know, we've only got a few years then that we can charge people exorbitant amounts on this stuff. Well, let's grab those 10 years. How do we do this? How do we just create a vaccine and tell everybody in the world, you got to take it? It's not tested, but you got to take it. And of course, that was October 2019. And they already war game this out. So they do it disruptively from the inside, and they do it iteratively, step by step. And so we have, as I've kind of put this together, 8 steps of a pandemic slavery. First, there is the boasting and the boosting stage. That was taken care of by the best boaster and booster you could find, Donald Trump. Oh, it's 100% safe. It's effective. And it is, they're wonderful. They're huge. I mean, just look at them. They're glorious. He's still doing this, by the way, on Mark Levin, plugging the vaccines as he plugs his book. Second stage is, hey, it's free. It's free. We'll even deliver it for you. It's free. Everybody wants it, but stand back. We're going to give this to our heroes first. You know, those people who've been on the front lines, they're going to be the first. We appreciate them so much. We're going to give them the vaccine first. Then, oh, you don't want it? We got plenty of these things, right? You mean you don't want it? Well, that's the bribery stage, donuts and lotteries. The next one is the passport stage. It's going to be required for travel, for public houses. Oh, by the way, you will be under house arrest until this comes out. I said that before. As soon as they started talking about locking people down, I said, they're going to lock you down. The vaccine's going to be your key to get out. That's what they've already wargamed over and over again. That was very easy to see that. And then the no jab, no job stage. Step number 5. Oh, by the way, we're going to do that to our heroes first. You know, those people we love so much that we worshiped, and then we made them the very first ones to be able to get the bioweapon. And then those who didn't get the bioweapon, they get to lose their job first. How about that? Number 6. The harassment stage, if you get an exemption, a religious exemption, it's a bit of a problem for them. I mean, you know, it's just all it is the Constitution. And we don't really have a problem with ignoring the Constitution. But religious freedom has so many different attachments to it. And so it becomes very awkward for them. It kind of exposes their hand if they just sweep it aside in one movement. And so they'll give you the religious exemption, but then they will hit you with harassment. We're going to test and test again and test again. We're going to do it frequently. We're going to increase the frequency. Then we're going to start charging you for it. And oh, by the way, we'll also isolate you from everybody else. Then there's step seven, which has just been released by Austria. And that is, not only do you get house arrests, not only do you get kicked out of your job, but now they take money from you if you don't get the vaccine. This is the mandate, the true mandate. You know, Biden is right. Well, you know, hey, I haven't mandated because I gave you an escape clause over here. No, no, this is where they say this is the true mandate. Just one step removed from doing what Alan Dershowitz has wanted to do from the very beginning, and that is send the military or the police to your door, drag you out, and force inject it into your arm. And don't think for a minute they won't do that. I mean, we're here in Texas. They have forced blood draw for people that they suspect might be drunk drivers. So when they do that type of thing, don't be surprised if they won't force that to you. But then there's the final step. And that is FEMA camps, the gulags, the reservations. We've had this a lot in the past. And this is what's happening now in Australia, the FEMA camps. Because, you know, as we've been told many times,
emergency, everybody to get from street.
It's emergency, right? And, you know, as I said the other day, it's just amazing to me. That these people who have now no longer talk about the left and the right and no longer talk about the deep state, the real deep state, the intelligent state that is destroying everything. No, they've become partisan cheerleaders of Trump, people like Alex, who had for years talked about FEMA camps. You know, they knew that this was going to be a federal emergency, that they were going to put people in camps. But guess what? We just ignored all of that. Oh, I can't. No. It's 4D chess. This isn't a FEMA camp emergency. You know, the emergency that Trump put in, that's not about FEMA camps. Oh, yes, it is. It's exactly what it is. We have a long history of this. It wasn't even a theory. Before there were German concentration camps, before we locked up people simply because they had Japanese ancestry, they were Americans. They didn't show there was any connection to the Japanese government that had attacked us at Pearl Harbor. But just because they were Japanese ancestry, they locked them up. And before that, we had the Indian reservations, which is really what the UN 2030 reservation, the UN 2030 reservation system is about that. You know, you can call it the Great Reset. You could call it the Great Reservation, where you put everybody on the reservation, you know, where they lock people in, they take away your kids, they ship them somewhere else to be reeducated, to remove the culture that they've been raised in. And then they take away your ability to make a living. They take away your ability to travel. Don't want to get off the reservation. Yeah, we'll have to send the cavalry after you. See, we invented that here. So don't tell me that's not going to happen with the American government. That was the American government that was created by the Civil War. That reset, that great reset, it reset us from the United States are to the United States is, where we consolidated government. You know, in the name of, you know, let's see, let's reinvent that. Oh, yeah, slavery, that was what it's about. No, it was actually part of the Industrial Revolution. It happened in Europe at the same time as they were creating nation states there. They had a civil war in Italy at exactly the same time. Look it up, Garibaldi and his army. But this is an emergency. And somehow we just missed that last year, completely blindsided, because, you know, it was Trump that was doing the FEMA emergency. Not a problem when he does it. Now the Australian army has begun forcibly removing residents in the Northern Territories to the Howard Springs quarantine camp located in Darwin. And they've got a real emergency. Oh, it's very, very much, you know, they got to get everyone from the cities.
Get from cities.
Everybody get from cities. Why?
Everybody.
Because they've got 9 new COVID cases. I play that over and over again. I want you, as soon as one of these frauds, as soon as Fauci or his other pharma frauds tells you emergency, I want you to hear that emergency. Everyone to get from cities to the camps. Comes after hard lockdowns are instituted in communities on Saturday night. And so they've now taken people out. And you know what this emergency is? 9 new COVID cases. 9 new COVID cases. It's a cold. 9 new people who, I don't know if they even have symptoms. I mean, I've seen some pictures of one very popular blogger. I'll talk about that in a moment here. She's got a fairly large following on Instagram and other things. She's an Australian fitness trainer and influencer, Morgan Rose Moroney. She has been swooped up and taken away into one of these FEMA camps. And she doesn't seem to be sick. This is just the basis of a test. And remember, we just had one of the many, many tests. You know, we have 59 different tests, and as our own FDA says, we can't compare their efficacy to each other because they're all testing for something different. So we can't compare them to whether they're accurate or not. You know, we sent this around, and we said, well, we don't have an isolated virus, so what we'd like for you to do is just to find something similar to it to test. So here's a genome sequence, and some people are testing for part of the genome sequence, and some people are testing for the full genome sequence, and some people just synthesized it, they said. That's in the FDA's own documents. And we subsequently found out that one Australian manufacturer of these tests, the test, just had to recall 2.2 million of the tests because they were all giving false positives. So you got a test, one test manufacturer, making them by the millions, and they're generating all false positives. And yet, even with this, you got 9 people, none of them sick, not sick enough to go to the hospital. And so they have now put them in their FEMA camps. We knew this was coming because I showed you the reports several months ago where they were bragging about what they were building and how they would soon be using it in the fall. But that was in New South Wales, I think. That was Gladys's stomping grounds there. And they haven't used those yet. This is in another area, the Northern Territories, another state of Australia. So they had the residents in these two communities no longer have 5 reasons to leave their homes, said the Northern Territory Chief Minister, Michael Gunner. This guy is a real piece of work. I'll tell you all the things he had to say. So they no longer have 5 reasons to leave their home. They have no reasons to leave their home because we're going to take them from their home and we're going to put them in a FEMA camp. He said, in the past, we've given people exceptions for buying food and supplies. We let them go out and exercise for up to 2 hours. I mean, these guys are so libertine. How in the world can you be so lax? I mean, after all, this is a virus that is the most deadly virus that mankind has ever seen, right? Well, no, but that's the way they're treating it. So if that were the case, if we have to take all these extraordinary, authoritarian, draconian measures, why are we letting people just exercise for 2 hours? Isn't that enough to kill everybody? We let them go places for care or caregiving. We let them go to work. We let them go to school. We're not going to let them do any of that stuff now. Now, none of those reasons for leaving home, because you are going to be leaving home. We're going to take you, and they took them with the army. They use the army. I said from the very beginning of this, I said, look at this. They call it Operation Warp Speed. Look at how involved the military is in this. The military is going to deliver it. And all of this stuff. I mean, from the very beginning, when 60 Minutes, the Sunday after the election on Tuesday they have the election. By Saturday, the media coronates Biden. The very next day, they had this piece already in the can about Operation Warp Speed. And it's military, military, military. And now the military is taking people to the FEMA camps in Australia. They can only leave for medical treatment in an emergency, or as required by law, he says. It's highly likely that more residents will be transferred to Howard Springs today. We have already identified 38 close contacts, But that number will go up, and those 38 are being transferred now. So they take people, oh, we got 9 cases here. Means that they tested positive with these phony tests. Now anybody that they can prove was in contact with them, they'll be snapped up as well. Whether or not they test positive. Do you see how broad they can spread the net? I imagine these people have also said things that they didn't like. So we'll look at how they use this. But just remember, this is not anything that was difficult to figure out. When they start using the term lockdown, lockdown was always a prison term. Then they started using it for the schools. And I said, do you realize that they are preparing people to live in a prison society? You know, I've got schools where they're monitoring everything the students do, where they have to go through metal detectors and all this other kind of stuff, where they have a constant police presence, where they're no longer spanking the kids. Instead, they're assaulting them, putting them in handcuffs and arresting them. You want to say that the spankings that people my age used to get from the principal, you want to say that's worse than what I have seen these police officers do? Here in Bastrop, we had a situation where the school police officer, and this is right after I first moved here, police officer was called to the school, and there was a fight that was going on. So he wasn't called to the school. He was at the school. So he is notified there's a fight going on. When he shows up, there's one individual, and he's trying to separate the two fighters. And the cop goes for him, grabs him from the back, body slams him head first into the concrete floor. Put the guy in a coma. I don't know if he's ever come out. For months, he was still in a coma. I don't know whatever happened to that kid. I didn't follow up on that story after many months of that. You want to tell me that's better than, all right, go to the principal's office. We had the dean of boys would always tell us from junior high school on through high school, first day of school, we would all meet in a big, in the basketball stadium by groups, and he would show us his paddle. Now it had holes, so the air would not slow it down. And no, it wasn't like that, but but his was probably more formidable. I never got a taste of it, but you want to tell me that that was worse than what's happening with these school cops? These school cops who, like in Broward County, the guy, instead of helping people when there was a shooter, goes and hides. But it's about conditioning the kids to live in an authoritarian, totalitarian police state. That's why whenever there's anything, oh, lockdown, lockdown, lockdown. That was always a prison term. Now it's still a prison term. It was a prison term when they started using it in 2020. So, you know, I'm sure it's not Trump's fault. I mean, you know, if you build it, they will come, right? And that means whether you're building prison camps or whether you're building the genetic code injection that's going to be used to threaten people into the prison camps. You build it, they'll use it. You build it, they'll use it. So we have, as I pointed out earlier this week, Francis Collins, the NIH director, says, you know, this COVID misinformation, these people just need to be brought to justice. They're working on it. The FEMA camp. Conspiracies, he said, are winning here. Truth is losing. That's a really serious indictment of the way in which our society seems to be traveling. This guy who is frequently called a scientist, Francis Collins, he's not a scientist. Science is never settled. Science is always about skepticism. Science is always about debate. You have to show the numbers. It's based on empiricism. And then there's going to be different debates about interpretations of the numbers. But of course, in an authoritarian, totalitarian society that Francis Collins, the evolutionist Christian, as he put himself out there, this guy who seeks to remove all independent authority, whether it's the Bible or the Constitution, I'm in charge. What I say matters. Look at my title. That's not science. That is not science. That is the antithesis of it. That's why Francis Bacon created the scientific method. is to push back against the academics like this guy. That was what they were talking about, the intellectual authorities of their day, the scientific pronouncements coming from academia. No, no, no. We want to do measurements, and we want to, you tell me what you think after what you've measured, and I'll tell you what I think, and we'll have a debate. No, that's not to be allowed anymore. You just call the other people conspiracists. You repeat what your titles are and your degrees and where you work, and that settles the message. And now, if that doesn't settle the message, then we need to, we got to have these people brought to justice. And this is becoming a frequent mantra of these experts. Francis Collins has echoed what just a couple of weeks ago, Borla, the CEO of Pfizer was saying. He said, these people were spread misinformation. They are criminals. And then Francis Collins a couple of weeks later said, they need to be brought to justice. Borla, November the 19th, said, they're criminals because they've literally cost millions of lives. No, they've cost him billions of dollars is what he's worried about. They've cost millions of lives. The only thing that stands between the new way of life, the new way of life, the new Great Reset, and the current way of life is, frankly, hesitancy to vaccinations. So if you are hesitant to vaccinations, if you tell people why they should be skeptical of this, if you debate these experts, you are not only dangerous now, you are a criminal. And something needs to be done to you. You need to be brought to justice, says Francis Collins. Again, the frequency at which these people are doing, the terms in which they're using it, this is not a coincidence. It is not hyperbole. It is iterative, disruptive, and iterative. We are taking these consistent steps to a medical dictatorship, to a pandemic slavery. So going back to Australia, the Northern Territories are home to a large percentage of Indigenous Australians. And there's been reports that they have been going by and forcibly injecting the Aborigines. But just remember that it is much easier to do this when it is a different people group. We had the Indian reservations. We had the Nazis in the concentration camps, mostly Jewish, not entirely Jewish. The Japanese, we did that here in America. This is one of the reasons why they're pushing racism so hard. They know that they're going to get the biggest pushback against this with white Christian conservatives. That's why they're demonizing white Christian conservatives, males especially. You want to look at the demographic that is most likely to oppose them? That's the one they're going to demonize. And that's what they're working on right now. 5 days ago, New Territories senator told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation that overcrowding in Indigenous communities was a massive problem. So let's take these Aborigines and stick them in the reservations, the FEMA camps. And then this same guy, Gunner, who is talking about this and saying, we're going to be doing a lot more of this. He said, these are strong measures, but the threat to lives is extreme. No, it isn't. The threat from government to our lives is what is extreme. The government is extreme. The government is a threat to our lives. And so this Australian fitness instructor, who is vlogging, video blog from the facility, as I mentioned before, Morgan Rose Maroney. She has 935,000 followers on Instagram, 170,000 subscribers on YouTube. And so she is now in one of these, in the Darwin, Australia prison camp, the FEMA camp, one of the first residents there. And she had been put in quarantine back in 2020, and she documented that when she was there. She had been traveling. Now she's saying that in this FEMA camp, I'll just continue to call it a FEMA camp, that she has just been given a written report, meaning that she's going to get a fine, by the police for exercising while maskless outside. She's a fitness trainer, an influencer. Don't exercise outside. She said, I got to make sure that I wear my mask every time I step out of the room, even apparently when you are eating and drinking and stuff as well, I think. So if I want to eat and drink, if I want to do anything with my mask off, I've got to be inside. That's the rules here in the quarantine. So, yeah, that's just really great, she said sarcastically. She also later documents how the man quarantining with her, quote, got in trouble for being at the base of the stairs of his veranda while he was working out. He got a verbal warning from the police officer. I obviously got a written warning from a police officer the other day as well. She said, we have to wear a mask when we go outside. Otherwise, we're both going to be getting a $5,000 fine. $5,000. That's Australian dollars. I forget what the conversion is. Dr. Robert Malone, inventor of the mRNA, just did an interview. He says, quote, the future of global totalitarianism is here. Totalitarianism, global totalitarianism is here, and it's here now. And so this article from WND recounting the interviews, they comment, WND comments, Americans should pay attention to what is happening to civil liberties in Australia, in Canada, Austria. It has become, as Robert Malone has said, a platform for advancing other agendas. It was never about the virus. It was never about a pandemic. They had a clear agenda to vaccinate everybody. And they've been very obvious about that. IA 2030, Immunization Agenda 2030, Bill Gates' organization, and the tagline for that is everyone, everywhere, every age. And what he means by that is everybody, everywhere, without exception, universally, globally, is going to get every vaccine they can imagine. And whatever they demand, we take. And before IA 2030 kicks in, he had his ID 2020, where everybody in the world gets an ID, a global ID. Yeah, it is the future of global totalitarianism, and it's here, said Dr. Robert Malone. It's just not evenly distributed. He said Austria is the most egregious example of the deployment of a totalitarian approach to this whole thing. And he said, basically, it's the madness of crowds, and a lot of these governments have been overtaken by this form of psychosis or hypnosis. That's why I interviewed Dr. McDonald, talking about his, United States of Fear. It is a psychosis. It is hypnosis. It is mental gaslighting. It's important that you understand what their techniques are. You have to understand what their goals are in order to understand what is truly happening. Malone, who invented the mRNA vaccines, said they believe these vaccines are effective, and they're clearly not. Again, this guy who is the chief minister of the Northern Territory in Australia, Gunner, said that more residents are being transferred to the camps, including 38 people who were in close contact with others that they have now identified with a positive test that is being misused. At the news conference on Monday, this guy Gunner was angrily jabbing his finger repeatedly for emphasis. He declared, anyone who opposes the vaccine mandate, listen to this, even if you're vaccinated, you'll be regarded by the government as an anti-vaxxer. If you support, he says, if you support, champion, give a green light, give comfort to, support anybody who argues against the vaccine, you are an anti-vaxxer, an enemy of the state, frankly. Going on to continue a quote from him, he says, absolutely, your personal vaccination status is utterly irrelevant. You understand, this is an obedience test. It has nothing to do with your vaccination status. It has nothing, therefore, to do, obviously. I'm glad that he's stressed this. This is the final aspect for you to understand this has nothing to do. How many times do you have to see these people reverse themselves? And, we've had Walensky say, oh, no, and Gates and Fauci, oh, it's going to protect you from transmission. And then when they all say, no, it doesn't protect you from transmission, because of mass psychosis, hypnosis, because of propaganda from the mainstream media, they will insist that that can't possibly be true. So you have to get vaccinated. We've got NPR and we've got the New York Times talking about Thanksgiving and how, you know, those unvaccinated relatives of yours, you just need to kick them out. Don't have those kids around grandma. They're going to kill grandma. If you're vaccinated, it's fine. They're still pushing. NPR is pushing it. New York Times is pushing it. I played for you the other day, The View, where they were apoplectic that, former person who worked with them would say, well, you know, hey, I've had it. I've got antibodies. We've certified that. I've got three different doctors. I've also got three different doctors that say I have health conditions. I shouldn't get it. And by the way, it's not a threat to you. Oh, it is. It is. Well, you know, they don't believe their vaccine works. They think that you've got to wear it. And this goes back to the mask. The mask was programming. Your mask doesn't protect you. You remember I played a PSA one point in time where they showed one person and they have all, you know, just close-ups of faces. And they're all different ages and sexes and different skin color and hair color and all this kind of stuff. But they all got masks on. So your mask doesn't protect you. It protects blah, blah, blah. And they slide the next face in. And so-and-so's mask does not protect them. It put somebody else in. It protects this guy or this woman or whatever. That they worked very hard on that. It was a placeholder for this. And so now you got this guy saying, now he takes it to the next level. You know, we know that the vaccines, and they all admit it, we knew it before they admitted it, do not do anything about transmission. But now they're saying, this guy is saying, if you are opposed to the mandate, even if you are vaccinated, you are an anti-vaxxer. And if you support, champion, give a green light, give comfort to, support anybody who argues against the vaccine, you are an anti-vaxxer. Absolutely. Your personal vaccination status is utterly irrelevant. That's right. The vaccination status is utterly irrelevant. It's irrelevant to transmission. It's irrelevant to protection. It doesn't protect anybody. As a matter of fact, there's a lot of information that's come out that shows that people, the latest data from the UK is showing that people who have been vaccinated are dying at a rate four times that of the people who are unvaccinated. It does not protect you. It's a weapon. It's a bioweapon. It's not about that. This is a loyalty oath. This is a Stalinistic approach that you must not only do what they say, get the vaccine, but you must believe that the mandates are good. Otherwise, you're with them. Otherwise, you're going to get the FEMA camp treatment. Because remember, these vaccines don't last. You know, they're constantly, well, now you need a third one, a fourth one, a fifth one, a sixth one. They're going to keep everybody on the hook. This is why he's saying this, because the people who are against the mandates now, and I talked about a fireman in Canada. He said, yeah, I was on the list. You know, as a hero. You know, he got this front of the list. He got it. He didn't have any effects from it. But he said, now that I see that they're mandating this, I'm opposed to it. He created an organization to oppose that. See, now this guy's saying, well, you're an anti-vaxxer because you are giving aid and comfort to the enemy of the state. You're a traitor, you anti-vaxxer. That's why I said I don't run from that. All these people say, well, I'm not against vaccines. I just think this particular thing, this vaccine, it was rushed. It wasn't tested. It's kind of weird. And you know, I think I ought to be able to have a say-so on it. No, I'm an anti-vaxxer. I am an anti-vaxxer. We need to all stand up like Spartacus, the end of the movie, and say, I am an anti-vaxxer. I'm proud of it. I have opposed the pharmaceutical industry as soon as I found out about their legal immunity to their products given to them by Fauci in 1986. Ich bin ein anti-vaxxer. Gesundheit Führer. No apologies. I will not raise my hand. I will not bow my head to these people who seek to intimidate me. No excuses for this. You just meet them head on. Call me whatever you want. I'll tell you what the truth is. And you know it as well. These people know it as well. It is an obedience test. It is a totalitarian demand like Stalin did of Alexander Solzhenitsyn. You must believe in the vaccine. Not just take it. You must believe in it. You must not criticize it. You must praise it. Bow to the vaccine, your master. After all, it was created by Trump. Bastard. Health officials, he said, this is Robert Malone, are impervious to data and actual facts. He said, these people are obsessed with potential mortality risk and potential hospitalization risk. Well, no, they're not. I disagree with Dr. Malone on that, frankly, because if you look at this and you look at their actions, what they were telling us at the beginning was, oh, we're concerned about potential hospitalizations and potential overwhelming of the medical system. Well, they're not concerned about that at all, are they? Because now what they're doing is by firing nurses who don't want to get the jab because they've seen the health effects of it and because they've seen that this isn't a deadly plague in the first place and they don't want the risk of the vaccine, they're firing those nurses, and that's causing them to do what they were telling us they had to lock us all down 617 days ago. We have to lock you down or it's going to be a burden on the medical system. Now their mandates are a burden on the medical system because it is the government tyranny that is a deadly virus. We have a pandemic, a global epidemic of authoritarian tyranny. As the DailySkeptic.org out of the UK puts it, the religious faith of European leaders and vaccines will end in the imprisonment of the unvaccinated. This is where this is headed. We're only a couple of steps away from that. You know, we are right now, as I count it, we're step number 6. There's 8 steps. The Austrians have already embraced step number 7. The Australians have embraced step number 8, and they're proud of it. And you better not criticize them. Even if you take the vaccine, you better not criticize them. And so corporate media has been silent about these protests for the most part. And you got worldwide protests that are happening, and they're not telling anybody about it. Glenn Greenwald said, I would genuinely like to see polling on what percentage of Democrats would favor Austria's lockdown for the United States, where the unvaccinated are legally barred by force of police from leaving their home except to see a doctor, even to go to work. We know they want them banned, and we want know that the Democrats want people fired. The Austrian Interior Minister has said, as of tomorrow, of course, he said this back on November the 17th, so we're now on the 23rd. So 5 days ago, he said, as of tomorrow, Every person living in Austria must be aware that they can be checked by the police at any time, unquote. One person posted that up, Dr. Eli David, and he said, from what year is this quote? Is this 1939 or 2021? In Prague, Germany, tens of thousands of people then poured into the streets to demonstrate against the country's constant state of lockdown the next day when that happened. In Australia, the internment camps, the lockdowns, the police state insanity. As one person pointed out, Melbourne continues 60-plus hours straight of protesting in front of the parliament to stop mandates and lockdowns. But you won't see that on mainstream media. We'll talk about that. You know, they'll talk about the Rittenhouse trial. They'll talk about many other things, but they're not going to talk about that. Even the Iranians are taking to the street to protest their country's lockdown. In the U.S., you had people in L.A. You had firefighters in New York and others protesting back in October 28th, but just on the November the 18th, they had massive protests in Los Angeles. We had thousands march in New York City this last weekend. These are some of the signs that were collected from LifeSite News that people were holding. They had signs and banners that said this: medical choice is a human right. Another one: mandates are unethical and unscientific. Another one: let my dad work. Another one: truth is treason in an empire of lies. Another one: I'm informed, I do not consent. Another one: I choose natural immunity. Another one: medical freedom now. Another one: you want to live in a free country or not? Another one: stop the mandate before it's too late. Another one: I am one of 80 million and I will never comply. Another one: airline crew will not comply. Finally, this one, which sums it all up: the real virus is communism, because communism is totalitarianism. That's what it is. The two are synonymous with each other. A New York City first responder recently forced to retire, participated in the march. He said the most touching moment of the day for him was when he came across three New York City firefighters wearing shirts with the message, "Bravest for choice." Bravest for choice. The website worldwidedemonstration.com said that the way they put it, they say authoritarian coronavirus restrictions have damaged our lives more than any virus has. And even if the effects of the virus were more damaging, the restrictions to our freedoms would still be unjust and unlawful. Our fundamental freedoms have top priority, and we cannot allow them to become constrained for the sake of the generations that follow us. As the freedom movement develops around the world, a variety of new solutions are rising that will enable people to take the power back, because it's not going to be given back. We let them take it from us, and now we're going to have to take it back from them. An international freedom movement is emerging that is building alternatives to established power structures and ways of living. People are choosing to leave densely populated areas, and they're forming new communities where they can more effectively govern themselves. That's a statement from worldwidedemonstration.com. Now, the guy who was talking about the former New York City first responder said, while the churches were closed here in New York City and the flock was denied the sacraments, these brave men served the city of New York courageously throughout the pandemic. He said, what irked me the most was this evil mandate was issued October the 20th by de Blasio, and the next night, the 21st, the Archbishop of New York was dining at a $5,000 per plate Al Smith dinner with de Blasio, the same man who issued the mandate, and who would soon be placing these brave men on leave without pay, pending termination, because they won't take forced inoculation. He said those three men in the photo are in that predicament right now. They dine with each other in these exorbitantly priced dinners while they betray their institutions. They betray their political institutions. They betray their religious institutions. And that's what he's pointing out. RFK Jr. went on a podcast with Michael Cohen. I wish I could get him on. I mean, I've been trying to get through to him, but he went on with the rat. I mean, Michael Cohen, this crooked lawyer who worked for this crooked Donald Trump for years and years, and he's got a podcast now. And the first thing this crook, this lying criminal lawyer, Michael Cohen, as a matter of fact, there was a story talking about criminal lawyers. There was a story over the weekend, and it said some lawyer who bragged that, you know, he could, you know, the best criminal lawyer out there and so forth. It sounded like Better Call Saul, if you've seen that. You know, and there's a scene in the first thing, Breaking Bad, where they go up and one guy says to the other, he says, well, you need a criminal lawyer. And he goes, you know, no, I mean, you need a criminal lawyer, a criminal lawyer. And so this guy who was bragging about how he could cut corners and everything, how you really needed a good criminal lawyer, they were laughing about it because he's now under multiple indictments. So he really was that kind of criminal lawyer. Well, Michael Cohen is just such a criminal lawyer. You know, sure, that you could easily get Donald Trump to say, oh, you need a criminal lawyer. That's what I've got. I surround myself with criminals, the mafia, Mossad, you know, that's the kind of people I want to have around me. And so Michael Cohen was just such a person. And, you know, there's no honor among thieves. They call him a traitor and they call him a rat and so forth. But, you know, hey, it's what that entire organization is. Anyway, so he has the audacity to say to RFK Jr., does it concern you that your book and its views are being given the most prominent airtime from people like Tucker Carlson? Seriously, this is Michael Cohen casting, shade on Tucker Carlson. Seriously. And RFK Jr. says, well, I'll talk to anybody who'll let me do this. He goes, I'll talk to criminals if it's the only way I can get my message out, you know. Not talking about anybody in this broadcast, for example, Michael Cohen, but I'll talk to criminals. Could have said like you, because that's exactly what he is doing. I will talk to criminals like you. And he says, you know, Anderson Cooper is not going to put me on CNN because CNN is run by pharmaceutical companies. They give it 70% of the revenues for the evening news. And by the way, he was nice enough not to say that about Fox News, but he said it in his book at the very end. I read that to you. The fact that he met Roger Ailes years ago, and Roger Ailes said 70% of our money comes from big pharmaceutical companies. And any of the people who work for me that put you on to criticize vaccine safety, I'll fire them. So RFK Jr. put that in his book. I'm sure Tucker Carlson knew that. And so good for Tucker Carlson. He used his tremendous popularity to push this truth out there. And, and he is too big. Well, Roger Ailes is not there anymore. But I don't think things have changed at Fox News, really. And so Tucker Carlson isn't leaving. Other people are leaving because they don't like Tucker Carlson. But right now it's just about the money, isn't it? It's about the money. And, you know, even though they're getting a lot of revenue from Big Pharma, and by the way, he said 70% when it's a non-election year. Yeah, they make a lot of money sucking up to these politicians as well. So he goes on to say Michael Cohen, RFK Jr. says, well, I probably agree with you on almost nothing. I came here because I'm willing to talk to anybody. Remember, he starts out, this is a very long thing, but he says, I'll talk to criminals. I'll talk to you. I'm willing to talk to anybody who's willing to listen. You know, I think we need to start talking to each other, even with people that we don't agree with. My father told me that a partnership is poison and it's intellectually dishonest. Partisanship, he says, is poison, intellectually dishonest. It's tribalism. It's bad for democracy. Well, he's absolutely right. So Cohen then goes on and says, well, based on your findings, you believe that Dr. Fauci and Bill Gates should be investigated for criminal wrongdoing? And he says, yes. Cohen, plain and simple? Because that's like, yes, they should. He says, well, of course. I mean, I think Fauci's policies, 80% of the people who died from COVID should not have died. And on and on. And talked about shutting down alternative treatment. Well, we have Gavin Newsom has just extended the
emergency.
That's right. Everybody get from city. And Gavin Newsom is going to get from state. He just declared emergency. I must get from the California. And he goes to Mexico just a couple of days after he extended the emergency order again. He's had his emergency order in since March, middle of March, the Ides of March. He's had his emergency order in of 2020. So since 2020, California's had their emergency that matched the federal emergency that Trump declared. And he has now just extended it until March of 2022. Remember, it was going to be 2 weeks to flatten the curve. Now we're 2 years. 2 years. So he extends the thing on just a couple of days before he leaves. And he's going to be gone until November the 28th to Mexico. Because it's such a big emergency that he's got to get out there. Now, California has averaged, and we're not talking about people who are sick. We're not talking about people who have been hospitalized. We're not talking about people who have died. We're talking about people who test positive with these bogus tests. Magnified by 1.1 trillion times, and millions of them preloaded for a positive case. And even with all that, Californians have averaged 16 new cases out of every 100,000 people. Compare that to Florida. 7 new cases out of every 100,000 people. So more than twice what Florida is. By their own metric. By their own metric. Assuming that that is a legitimate metric, and it's not. Let's just give them that and say by your own metric, you're twice as bad as Florida. But the media is all over Florida and DeSantis and the Republicans. But it's the emergency that if you go back and look at the beginning of this year, while Trump was still president, by the way, January the 8th, a lot of people didn't notice the news about the California budget because they're paying attention to January the 6th. The California budget from boom to bust and then back to boom, said the Mercury News. They said that they had projected a $5.6 billion surplus that they had planned on having. And then when the pandemic happened, they said, well, we're going to have a $54 billion shortfall because they had followed through on this. But Trump came through for Gavin Newsom. Instead of a $54 billion shortfall, which they said, well, I think that's probably what's going to happen. You better give me some money. And not just California, but again, this became the personal discretionary funds for Republican as well as Democrat governors, as we saw Brad Little doing the same thing up in Idaho. These guys were financially incentivized tyrants. They could pay off their political friends. They could get anybody to do anything. It was many times what their entire state budget was, in many cases, certainly in Idaho. But for Gavin Newsom, this $54 billion surplus was shortfall was turned into a $15 billion surplus by January the 8th because of the federal cash that was given to him by Donald Trump. And so they had big plans on how they were going to spend that surplus. They're going to pay people cash for clunkers type of thing. Remember when Obama did that? If you got a vehicle that's more than 15 years old, we want to get those things. We want those internal combustion engines things to go away. Give them to us so we can crush them and make everybody dependent on our new modes of transportation. So they'll pay people up to $9,500 to scrap their reliable, affordable cars and buy one of these plug-ins. It's great that Gavin Newsom is giving 100% emission-free vehicles the investment that they deserve as part of the transition away from fossil fuels. So they're using all that massive surplus of money to do stuff like that. They're cushioned by a $15 billion surplus. And that was in January. Fast forward 6 months later, well, not even 6 months, by 4 months later, the CARES money was still pouring in because it's a continuing state of emergency. That's why Gavin Newsom just extended it to March. It's not an emergency, but boy, it keeps that cash coming. And so the cash kept coming. They went from a $15 billion surplus in January to a $76 billion surplus by May, June. And they just can't figure out all the wonderful Green New Deal projects that they're going to do to spend all of that cash. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about what they're telling you for Thanksgiving. We'll take a look at the mandated Trump juice. We've got some interesting updates on both the Waukesha attack as well as Kyle Rittenhouse. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
When I think of Thanksgiving, I think of family, friends, and feasts, and maybe you do too, and these people who are anxious to take everything from us and to reset society are busy in terms of taking all of that away from us, family, friends, and the feasting. Welcoming family into your home for Thanksgiving, asks NPR. Well, here's how you keep COVID out. You got those filthy friends and those filthy relatives coming to visit you. You don't want to have them around, especially those little rugrats. Here's one thing to be thankful for this year, says NPR. It's not Thanksgiving 2020. A year ago, vaccines had not been approved, and daily deaths were rising sharply, surging to more than 2,000 a day by December. Let me just interject this real quickly here. Take a look at this picture right there. Yeah, that's the cases. And, you know, when you look at that map, you know, red is bad, and the lighter the color is and the more yellow it is or white, that means fewer cases. Look at it November the 19th, 2020 versus November the 19th, 2021. Do you notice it kind of looks exactly the same? It didn't change anything. But we got the vaccines now. That's great. So, yeah, even by their own metric, they have said, as they count people who've died with COVID, and they're actually not paying attention to the vaccine deaths, the Trump juice, the Trump shots, the Trump AIDS, the acquired immune deficiency shots. They're not counting any of that stuff. And yet, even with that, the death total is now more than it was in 2020. So, yeah, the vaccines, they've saved us, haven't they? A risk reduction measure, says NPR, that you might want to ask your guests to take a COVID test before a large holiday get-together, a rapid antigen test. See, that's just it. You invite people and say, well, you know, I'd like to have you over for Thanksgiving. You're such close friends and family. By the way, would you mind taking a test? And, oh, by the way, don't even bother to think about it if you're unvaccinated. I don't even care if you take a test. I don't want you around. Think carefully about whether you should include unvaccinated family members, says NPR. And so they get a guy who is supposedly an expert, certainly not an expert on relationships, is he? He says, I think it's reasonable for people to require their guests to be immunized, he said. A vaccine requirement could lead to some hurt feelings or some conflict, but they say, I really do think that's perfectly acceptable to say, I'm sorry, you're not vaccinated. To which I would suggest you reply, I'm sorry, you are brainwashed. And OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. Say it with a smile. It's really important to just keep in mind that this is not the time for those families to let their guard down. Yeah. Well, we all have relatives like that, don't we? I remember, well, I won't go into that. I'm going to that. So, yeah, don't let your guard down, which means that you need to kick out anybody who's not vaccinated. Give them a test when they come in, and then make sure that you isolate and mask the kids, those filthy little rugrats. As a matter of fact, the New York Times, that's their specific advice. They have, as one person asked them a question, one person who has been who was suffering from this psychosis of propaganda, as Dr. McDonald called it, the United States of Fear. One person living in the United States of Fear writes the New York Times and says, if our child, 9, and a cousin, 10, have each received one dose of the vaccine 2 weeks prior to Thanksgiving, is it safe for us to eat indoors? There will be about 20 guests all vaccinated, and the 65 and older crowd have all received boosters. You're all going to die. Anyway, I'm glad... I shouldn't say that, but yeah, these people just don't understand where the real risks are. I mean, that's the amazing thing. Nobody is asking the New York Times about overeating That's always been the real health concern in past years for Thanksgiving. The quantity and the quality of the food that you eat. But we don't care about that anyway. So here's the New York Times reply. I'm glad to hear that the children and all the guests are vaccinated, as the kids will not be fully vaccinated until 2 weeks after their second shot. I think some care is warranted, especially because some attendees are 65 and older, and thus at greater risk of more serious breakthrough infections. Yeah, they're going to die before too much longer, for sure. All of us are going to die. The older you get, the chances that you're going to die increase. Anyway, he says you could have the kids wear masks, or this is the best advice. Eat quickly and stay away from the older adults when the kids are eating. They have to eat quickly and stay away. Come here, eat this, get out of here now. It's a great, great Thanksgiving, isn't it? So this was reported by Nolte at Breitbart, who has become one of the truest believers in the religion of vaccines that I have ever seen. He is absolutely, has unshakable faith in the vaccines, Nolte at Breitbart. He absolutely does. It's too bad that doesn't mean anything. So he says, well, wait a minute. Do the vaccines work or not? He says, if you're vaccinated, you're vaccinated. If you're not vaccinated at this point, you've made the adult decision to accept a certain amount of risk, but you don't have to worry about what other people do because you're vaccinated. So he got part of that right. At least he's not saying your vaccine protects other people. He says, hey, your vaccine protects you, so stop selling that. While we're talking about food, you know, we've had something that has been popular is we talk about people eating food locally. You know, you can go to some farms and they have what they call farm to plate. You know, you can go right there and eat the food where the food is being grown, great places to eat. But I think what we have now is when we look at the combined agenda of this, and it's just the Green New Deal and all of the austerity programs that come with that, stopping our liberty of movement, stopping our ability to travel, dictating to us what we can and cannot eat, all of that stuff. That's all been a part of the Green New Deal. And so all of these restrictions on our life, all of this great reset, they set that aside momentarily. They're bringing it back. But they set it aside momentarily to implement this all based on the pandemic fear. And so now, instead of farm to plate, we have pharma to plate slavery, because they want to take our food away from us. We could also put it, I guess we could say, we're going from Soylent genes, the injection, to the injection that's tested, developed, using murdered babies as cannibal medicine. So we could call that Soylent genes. And we're going from Soylent genes to Soylent greens. Yeah, we're going to eat all kinds of things for these people. COVID to cops, if you will, their climate summary. So with the vaccine mandates looming, you have businesses are saying, well, you know, we got, they're getting a lot of pushback from employees, obviously. And they're concerned, how are we going to stay in business if we lose this many people? Because, you know, nobody wants to work under the kind of conditions that we've created under this new austerity. Who wants to work in a retail environment or a fast food place with a mask on their face all the time? So, you know, people are looking at this and saying, meh, I don't care anymore. So are we going to throw out the people who are currently working by dictating to them that they got to have a vaccine shot that they don't want? Disney World is saying no. Disney World has put their vaccination policy on hold. And I'm glad to hear that, because I've had at least one listener who works for Disney write me about how that was hanging over their head. But the executives in Florida, along with UPS is also saying the same thing, are saying, well, we're going to wait. You know, you guys are telling Joe Biden, you lost in court. And so we're going to wait and see what happens here. And Joe Biden has been telling them, do not wait. You continue on with this. As a matter of fact, it's not just Disney and UPS, but it's also Chris Spear, the president and CEO of the American Trucking Association. He outlined the damage that the mandate could do during a meeting last week with the House Transportation Infrastructure Committee. They've had a comment period where they brought in people who were big corporations and big organizations like this, and they were able to give their feedback. And I think when you see what has happened with the, again, remember there's three components to this Biden vaccine tyranny. One of them is an executive order for people who work directly for him. If you work for the federal government, if you're in the military, that's one executive order. Then there was a second executive order for companies that sell stuff to the federal government. They're contractors. They've got them by the money strings. Then the third one was not an executive order for over 2 months. He just said he was going to do it. He's going to do it through OSHA. And that's the one for private companies where they're not federal contractors, but they have 100 or more employees. They took 2 months to do something about that. And then when they came out with it, they said, well, it's going to be another 2 months. And then they also did another month delay for the people who were federal contractors. So there's three different components to it. Now, that third component is what we're talking about here with the American truckers. And in that component, as they were negotiating with the Biden administration, they said, well, what they got out of it was a couple of concessions, really. They said that remote workers are not going to have to get the vaccine. They have to test 72 hours before they go into work. But they also put an exception in there for people who work outside. And I think that was a carve-out specifically for truckers, for longshoremen, to try to buy them a little bit more time. Remember, they're not going to, this exception, anybody that they give an exception to at this point, you're not home free. They're going to take that back. If you comply with them and you get two shots, they're going to take that away from you as well. They're going to make you get three, four, five, six, no end to any of this. Right now, they're just testing and probing and doing this. This is a gradual boiling of the frogs. Nobody is going to get out of this thing. Anybody that complies with them, and we're talking about the cops who have decided that they're going to be the private army for these madmen. Any of you cops who comply with this, any of you nurses who comply with this, you're going to get it good and hard. Eventually, they're going to come for you. And it's even if you comply with it, you cannot speak out against their tyranny. And there is not going to be any end to the tyranny. So these are just delaying tactics. This is how they're trying to keep the pushback from being too large. So this guy of the American Trucking Association said, in our sample survey of the fleets, it came back that 37% of our drivers not only said no, they said, hell no, 37%. He said, even if only 10% of them were to actually leave, that would be catastrophic. That's why they carved out that exception. He said, we're already short 80,000 drivers. That could inflate it, even if it's just 10%. That could inflate it to 250,000, 250,000. It could triple it. And then it could be much bigger than that. Because he said, you know, 40%. I don't know why he drops it down to 10% when he says 37%, 40%, in other words, are saying, hell no. He says, so you're trying to solve the supply chain problem. You know, you're actually compounding it. Are they really trying to solve the problem? Or are they trying to compound it? This is not about trying to keep the supply chain problem from getting worse. This is not about fixing the supply chain. This is about a gradual enactment of their totalitarian agenda. It's going to be total. The control will be total. It will be for everybody. It will be every aspect of your life. They're just rolling it out by degrees. You know, they're not trying to solve the supply chain problem any more than they're trying to solve the border problem. They're not trying to solve any problems. He goes on to say the Biden administration was taking the wrong approach for these vaccinations. He said, look, you want to get people vaccinated because we all agree this is a goal we can all agree on. We need to increase vaccination protections and defeat the pandemic. It's vital that public health measures first do no harm, he said. And this one will make the supply chain difficulties worse if it's not revisited substantially. In other words, for him, first do no harm is not the fundamental statement about medical ethics. It's just about the money. This is why these people are so easily controlled. And that's why we are so easily controlled. because we put too much emphasis on mammon and not God. That's how they control everybody. So he says, because of its one-size-fits-all approach and its short implementation timeline, in other words, you got to do it a little bit more slowly. Come on, you know. Buttigieg, meanwhile, with Thanksgiving coming up and with 40% of the TSA not vaccinated and with the deadline for the TSA happening today, he says it's not a problem. It's not going to impact travel at all, which tells me, I think, again, just as they did when they rolled out the naked body scanners and everybody said, we're going to opt out. You know, we're not going to take it. That'll slow everything down and we'll force them to get rid of these things. And what they did was they just quietly said, all right, just waved everybody through. We'll suspend it on the busiest travel day of the year because they knew there was no threat against airports or airplanes. They even said it in their own statements. That was discovered in a lawsuit, and they accidentally exposed that they had written that when they posted the discovery documents unredacted first on the pacer.gov site where the lawsuits go up. Then they redacted it. And so but it was too late. We'd captured it. So anyway, what he's saying is, he said on the Sunday programs, he said, don't worry. The federal worker vaccine mandates will not impact holiday travel. He said he expects no travel disruption because of it, noting that his agency's employees have been very cooperative, except 40% of them have not gotten the vaccine. He said, I've seen no indication that the vaccine requirement is going to impact travel in any way, certainly in terms of our ability as a federal administration to provide the services that are needed. Did you know that they provide a service? Well, yes, it's a psychological service. You know, it's security theater. They do things and, you know, they wear uniforms and they go through motions and stuff to make you feel better and to feel safer. When in actuality, from an actual security standpoint, they're increasing the risk. But while we're talking about Buttigieg, this Marxist, by the way, as I mentioned earlier, the amount of money based on this federal emergency that was given to these governors was absolutely corrupting. And it gave them a lot of power. But you know who's got the power now, the most power now? This Marxist, Buttigieg. It's got the most power. And there's multiple articles talking about, look at how powerful this guy is. They've given him $1 trillion to spend. Well, not $1 trillion, because the infrastructure bill is not really about infrastructure. The part that they say is about infrastructure is hundreds of billions of dollars. It's not the full $1 trillion, you know. So he's got at least $500 billion. The other is going on social engineering. But even the part that they say is going to be spent on actual infrastructure in terms of roads and bridges, that's really about social engineering as well. But the key thing is, as USA Today is pointing out, he's gone from Mayor Pete to the decider. Let me just talk a little bit about the politics involved here. You're seeing article after article in the mainstream and left-wing media contrasting and comparing Buttigieg to Kamala Harris because Kamala Harris's poll numbers are so low. And what they're doing is they know that Biden is circling the drain. What is going to happen when he's replaced? I mean, he's saying, yeah, I'm going to run in 2024. Powell, if you're standing vertically in 2024, it'll be an accomplishment. If you look at what he looks like from a health standpoint, if they can even point him to the teleprompter by 2024, I don't know. But, and I've got a clip of him from 1987. I'm going to show you here in a second. You can see just how much decline there's been. But they're looking at his replacement. Kamala Harris is unbelievably unpopular. I don't think she ever in the primaries ever got more than 1% of the vote. So Buttigieg is not much more popular, actually. But he is somebody who is more intelligent. And, of course, he's got a lot of intersectionality boxes that he checks by being gay. That's why I call him Buttigieg. He's very proud of that. And the Marxism aspect of it is not a problem for anybody in the Democrat Party anymore. But here's a guy who not only is going to be putting in a Marxist infrastructure, and by that I'm literally, that's exactly what I mean. It is a Marxist infrastructure. It is all about public control, centralized control of transportation. And not just centrally controlled by your local government even, you know, where they're running the buses and the light rail and all this other boondoggles that are out there. No, it will be centrally controlled by the federal government. It is a Marxist infrastructure bill. Everything in it is designed to get rid of the automobile, the private automobile, and to replace it with government-controlled cars. Yeah, no cars, just like the Soviets. You know, the Soviets are kind of the brunt of a joke, you know, for their Ladas and these garbage cars that they made. But at least they made cars. They weren't as totally totalitarian and Marxist as these people in Washington. They don't want there to be cars that you control. And I think that had a lot to do with it. I mean, you know, they could have, even though they were garbage cars, I think the Soviets could have built more of those cars, but they really didn't want people to have that kind of independence. And so it became something that was just reserved for the party apparatchiks and the elites to have those types of cars. I love the joke, I've told it before, of that Ronald Reagan told about the Soviet Union. And he said, he was talking about the guy placing his order for a car, and they tell him, I will put you on the list. You'll get it in 20 years. And his reply was, morning or afternoon? He said, what do you mean? Telling you it's 20 years. What do you mean, morning or afternoon? And he said, well, because I've got the dishwasher being installed in the morning. So that's what Boudier is going to be bringing to us, that kind of Soviet system. We'll have cars, but you'll pay for them by the ride, and they will control where you ride, and they will monitor everything that you do. That's what Apple is doing. Apple has now, they've leaked their plans for the car. You know, they widely rumored that they were going to come up with an Apple car, and then they said, no, we're not doing it. And now there's, you know, pictures and all this other kind of stuff that came out this last week. And it looks very much like a slightly trimmer Soviet automobile. It is Soviet in its central control of your movement. It has no steering wheel. It has no pedals. You'll just be sitting in this little thing. What we call that is a shuttle car. It's a little shuttle. It's not a car. You don't have any control over it. That's what they want. Do you really want to have these technocrats in Apple, these people who are controlling the internet, who are censoring us everywhere? Do you really want Apple and Google controlling your movement, watching your every movement, reporting and monetizing your every movement? That's the last thing I want. And that's why I've talked so much about cars over the years. But he was Pothole Pete because they criticized him for not filling the pothole. So now he's got $1 trillion, hundreds of billions of dollars in corruption and waste and producing an infrastructure that is going to be counterproductive to individual freedom and choice. As a matter of fact, some of the things that he's... It's just article after article lifting up Boudigay. I think they're putting him in place to be the vice president and to try to, when Kamala is made president. They say his presidential bid didn't last until the Arizona primary, but his role overseeing hundreds of billions of dollars in infrastructure funds puts him at the center of one of the chief accomplishments of the Biden administration. See, getting a blank check for trillions of dollars, that's an accomplishment in Washington. Why? Because that gives them power. And it gives him a lot of power. About $1 billion in grants the department awarded Friday gives us a taste of what Boudigay is going to do. He prioritized equity. Now, that's the intersectionality. So he when he handed out $1 billion, he prioritized equity and environmental criteria. Shifted efforts away from the road efforts, which the Trump administration had favored. His experience as mayor has prepared him for such an undertaking by government. How does being mayor of a small town, a university town, how does that prepare you for spending and centrally planning and altering our infrastructure across this country? It doesn't, quite frankly. But when we look at what they're planning on doing, the cities talking about carbon neutrality, the BBC is saying, you know, more than half of the world's population currently lives in cities. And by the middle of the century, 68% of humans on planet will live in urban areas. No, they plan on pretty much everybody. That's the whole plan. The whole UN 2030 agenda is to pack you into the cities. They made that clear when they were still calling it Agenda 21. When they called it Agenda 21, what they were saying was, well, you know, sometime in the 21st century, we're going to create these mega cities. Like in Texas, it's going to merge San Antonio and Austin and Dallas, that vertical strip there. That's just going to become one great big metropolis super city. And we're going to squeeze everybody out of the suburban and rural areas, mainly because they'll cut your transportation. And so their goal is to have everybody packed in the cities where they're easily controlled. They said, well, the problem is the cities are already responsible for 60% of our greenhouse emissions. Well, you know, if that's your imaginary problem, then you might want to take a look at cities like Wuhan. It was so bad, the pollution there, that many people believed that that was what was being diagnosed as a respiratory illness, just the solution, the pollution that was there. 25 megacities have now pledged to become carbon neutral by 2050, meaning that they're not going to allow anybody to do anything that takes any energy. In London, for example, the ultra-low emission zones, ULEZ, have recently been expanded 18-fold in the city center, and now it is the largest zone of its kind in Europe. The aim is to encourage people to swap to lower emission vehicles. But even then, these still generate carbon emissions during the manufacturing process. So there is no satisfying these people. You got to take something down to zero, said Bill Gates famously. You know, he says you got people who are eating food and they're doing this and the activity and everything. You got the population. One of these terms has got to go to zero. Which one of those is going to be? Well, like starve people, or we could just kill the people. Because as they move out of these, they're prohibited diesel. Then they prohibited gasoline engines. Then they prohibit hybrid vehicles. They've got a timeline as of, you know, a couple of years from now, all these things are going to be prohibited. They're just phasing it in. They're doing it from the inside. They're doing it disruptively. They're doing it iteratively, all of this stuff. And so, you know, we kill the diesel, kill the gas, kill the hybrid cars. And now even the electric cars, they use a lot of energy and emissions during the manufacturing process. So we just got to get rid of those as well. Paris is creating 400 miles of new bicycle lanes. I guess, you don't have to worry about the cyclists. You know, when you start to cycle, you start breathing more rapidly, don't you? A little bit. Most of us, especially if you're in the kind of shape I am, you're going to breathe out a lot more. you're going to be exhaling a lot of CO2. And they keep telling us that that is an evil. It's like it's a toxic poison. No, it's not. It's what plants need. But anyway, since they have fixated on that, these cyclists are going to be breathing out more CO2. That's still not the solution. It goes back. Bill Gates has got the solution. Why won't they just listen to him? You just got to kill the people. That's all it is. You just got to kill the people. You can't have them driving around with bicycles. I mean, they're like a bunch of farting cows or something. So the plan that's announced by the mayor of Bogota, Colombia, Anne Hidalgo, they've made 75 miles of streets car-free. This is what Booty Gay is going to be doing. He's going to be, and I just went into an area of Austin that I hadn't been in for a year this last weekend. And, boy, they had narrowed it down considerably. It was actually an area that I used to go through regularly as a commute. And they've squished down the lanes to where you can barely fit through them without sideswiping somebody because they've added a bicycle lane. And guess what? Nobody's in the bicycle lane. Nobody's using the bicycle. They do this everywhere. It was about 4 years ago. Karen and I went back to Tampa, where I grew up. And we had some things we had to take care of there. And as we were driving around, road after road after road had been, they call it a road diet, where they narrow the road. They put bicycle lanes up. And we were there for 3 days. And finally, one day, we saw one guy, middle-aged guy, riding a bicycle. And I said, he's the guy? He's the guy that they narrowed all these roads and created all these bottlenecks everywhere for this one guy? We've seen one guy riding the bicycle in 3 days? That's exactly what is happening. And then, of course, it's not going to end there. It's the food. It's even air conditioning. Singapore hailed as a leader of sustainable development, but hugely dependent on air conditioning. So we've got to get rid of air conditioning in hot climates. You know, that kills people. We had people dying in, we've locked down the world because we're worried about elderly people getting COVID. But, you know, we've had people dying in rest homes after they lost power because of the hurricane. It happened just a couple of years ago. But, you know, let's cut the power to the air conditioning. And then it gets even more, you know, as the BBC is going through all these different sources of things that are going to kill us, the next thing that's going to kill us is concrete. Not that it's going to fall on us, but that it has emissions. And so we got to get rid of steel and concrete. That means we got to use wood. Oh, but wait a minute. We can't cut the wood out of the forest. We can't even take dead wood out of the forest. We don't want to remove standing dead wood, and then that makes the forest burn. There's no end to this. The bottom line is you've just got to kill the people. And so, you know, along those lines, they've been very successful in terms of getting Americans to not want to have kids. And it's not necessarily all about the climate fear. When you look at the poll that has just come out, what they're bragging about is the fact that this is a Pew Research poll. They say 44% of Americans between the ages of 18 to 49, that's a little bit broader than what you would typically say is, child years. But anyway, between 18 to 49, it said 44% of the adults said they don't want to have children. That is a 7% decline in the number of people who wanted children back in 2018. So in 2018, it was 51%, and now it's down to 44%. 74% of parents of the same age said that they would not be having any more kiddos. Now, if you're going all the way up to 49, I can understand, and they've kind of loaded these numbers. But said both groups ranked medical and finances high up as the reasons why parents don't want to have kids. They said there were 3.6 million babies born last year. That is a 4% decrease. It's the biggest decrease since 1973. What happened in 1973? Oh, yeah, Roe v. Wade. That's what happened. Let me just say this hopelessness, this sense of doom, whether it is coming out of climate propaganda or the pandemic propaganda, the fear, but it's also the materialism. When they ask people more specifically why they didn't want to have kids, they said of the people who said that they did not want to have kids, they said, 56% of them said, I just don't want kids. I don't like kids. So we don't value kids in this society. We really don't. We don't want to. We are so narcissistic. We're so self-involved. We can't see the value of having kids. Some of them said for medical reasons, financial reasons. Some of them said no partner. 10% of them said, my age, because they went all the way up to 49. But then you had the fear factors here. State of the world was 9%. Climate change was another 5%. So when you look at this and you understand what we have been, how we've been guided by the media, guided by government, the reality is that as you look at this competition between the Biden administration, again, one of the first things they wanted to do was to enact climate, and the other thing that was equally important to them was the LGBT amendment. And so when we look at this follow-up bill, the Build Back Better. So you've got the infrastructure bill, $1 trillion-plus dollars, and now they've got another trillion. I don't know exactly how much they're talking about spending, but it's been passed by the Democrat House, the Build Back Better plan, and it's got some interesting things in it. First of all, it gives money to the abortion industry because we don't want to have kids. And it also is going to be forcing faith-based child care organizations to affirm the LGBT ideology, as Christian Headlines puts it, or lose federal funding. So I've always said that this is not about you tolerating. They don't want you to tolerate what they do. They want you to celebrate what they do. And they want to, and they've made it very clear, they want to attack people over and over again. We've seen the small businesses that have been attacked by LGBT activists. One of these has just concluded as a Christian florist, Baronelle Stutzman. And she has, for years, gone through the courts because she had this homosexual activist, Robert Ingersoll, demanded that she provide flowers for his same-sex wedding ceremony. They find out who's a Christian, and it's like, I'm going to rub your nose in it. I'm going to make you bow before me. That's their attitude. And so she refused to do that. The Washington Supreme Court, the one at Washington State, ruled in 2017 that the government can force Christians to serve same-sex weddings. And then the U.S. Supreme Court vacated that the next year. And they gave directions that the lower court should consider the case of the Masterpiece cake shop owner, Jack Phillips, which they had ruled on. Yet the Supreme Court in Washington State did not do that. And so Stutzman's lawyers at the Alliance Defending Freedom went back to the Supreme Court and tried to negotiate this for them. They said, you told them, and this is exactly the same thing that happened with the Masterpiece cake shop, what they were doing to her. Same principle, you know, whether they're forcing you to make a cake to celebrate what you believe is wrong, or whether they make you photograph it, or whether they make you do a custom floral arrangement, it's still the same principle. But the Supreme Court is not going to uphold that, not with the justices that we've got. You only had Thomas, Alito, and Gorsuch say that we should hear it. The rest of them, including the other two that Trump appointed, said, well, we don't care. We're not going to listen to this. So basically, this is where she winds up. She's going to have to pay $5,000 to this guy Ingersoll, who attacked her because of her Christian beliefs. Decided he'd rub her nose into it. She had to pay him $5,000, and she has just decided she's just going to retire to let this end. She says, I'm 77 years old. I'm not going to keep fighting this. And, of course, the Supreme Court is not going to fight for individual liberty either. And so where are we now? Well, now they're taking it to the next step. The Biden administration, as I said, as part of their Build Back Better, and this is their social engineering plan writ large. I mean, they put a lot of this stuff into the infrastructure bill, but it's really in the Build Back Better plan. They're going to shut out any Christian or other faith-based facilities that affirm traditional marriage values and traditional biblical doctrine that sex is Bob. Biological, objective, and binary. So they said, you're not going to get any federal money for child care, but we will provide free preschool for all 3 to 4-year-old children, but not to any groups that don't push LGBT. So they require all preschool and child care facilities to abide by federal non-discrimination laws related to gender identity and sexual orientation. This means that faith-based facilities, when you got a conflict of rights and preferences, well, religious freedom is thrown out the window, which is a real warning to everybody. Just as some people are starting to get this religious exemption that buys them a little bit more time with these corrupt employers, understand that that too is limited. If you are going to pit rights against each other, you've got a lot of people out there who are OCD about this stuff, who bought into this fear, and they believe that if you don't get vaccinated, you are a threat to them and that you are impinging on their rights. They've made this case over and over again, even though it's total bunk. So they said the problem is faith-based facilities now will not be able to participate in this money if they do not uphold and push LGBT ideology. Now, we're talking about 3- and 4-year-old kids. And this Build Back Better plan, the Biden administration is engaging in telling these organizations, you engage in pedophilia and gay grooming and transgender grooming, or we're not going to give you any money. Is this a difficult decision for these faith-based organizations? They need to decide whether they're going to follow God or mammon. What was mammon? Well, that was an idol from the Syrian culture. That was from the Chaldean culture, you know, an idol that represented prosperity and wealth. So who are you going to serve? Who are you going to worship? You're going to serve God or mammon? They're struggling with this. They have to think about this. Religious organizations, according to the New York Times, say the bill's provisions would force them to choose between participating in the Child Care Initiative and continuing to teach religious content, convene all boys or all girls programs, or give preference in hiring or admissions to people of their religion. In other words, you can't separate the 3- and 4-year-olds by gender. You can't give preference to people who agree with your religious beliefs, even if you are a religious organization. You're a church, school, or daycare, or something like that. No, you're not going to get any federal money. So you're going to have to choose. Is it going to be God or mammon? Well, we've kind of seen what these people do, haven't we, with the vaccines, with the vaccine mandates? You've got the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops said these bills' provisions are a departure from the approach in existing federal programs. It's a new and troubling compliance obligation. You know, if they give you the money, they're going to control you. It's always been that way. It's just their goals have become more perverse. Al Mohler. Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. They got another guy who's, another group that's been pushing the Southern Baptist Seminary, but Al Mohler telling everybody, this is a miracle. This vaccine is a miracle. You should thank God for the vaccine. I get it. By all means, get it. Now he's saying, religious institutions would no longer be able to operate in a way that's consistent with their own beliefs when it comes to gender and sexual morality revolution. Hey, Al. It's about the money. Remember remember they bought you with the vaccine stuff? Just bow down. It's okay. I mean, if you're going to grind your kids up and put them in an injection and you're going to genetically modify people, it's genetic code injection. What's the big deal with this? I mean, we're just talking about, turning the little 3- and 4-year-olds gay. I mean, what's the, gaslighting and pressuring them about all this stuff? Just have some drag queen story time hour at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary there. That's not a problem, is it? They'll give you money for it. Come on. Join the party. It's a big party. Celebrate it. Lots of cash there. He says it may be true that there will be many Christians who say, this isn't about me. It's not about my interests. It's not about my religious organization or my favorite institution. But he goes, they're coming for you. Just understand that. Well, that's right. They are. And they've been coming for you for quite some time. And they're coming for the kids. And it's not just the LGBT stuff. In this Build Back Better job, they're also funding the abortion industry. Well, why not? They've removed the Hyde Amendment using this Build Back Better Act. They will expand abortion funding. Students for Life Action identified new funding streams for the abortion industry. The legislation includes billions of dollars to expand Obamacare to subsidize health insurance plans to cover abortion. Nowhere does the bill have Hyde protections in it, which means funding for programs such as nursing education and public health could train people on how to commit abortion or pay for the abortions. There is an $85 million set aside to train health professionals on how to combat climate change, which includes health risks associated with climate change for pregnant, lactating, and postpartum individuals. Well, look, we had $80 million that we gave to Planned Parenthood. They were supposed to be prohibited from getting the money, but then we found out that Democrats stuck it in there anyway, and nothing happened. They didn't take it back. So, that's what happened last year. So why are we surprised about this? Congressional Democrats have once again made it clear how aligned they are with radical left's agenda by voting in favor of a bill that mandates taxpayer funding of abortion and may force faith-based child care providers out of the system. For the second time this year, the House has passed budget language that fails to include the Hyde Amendment and other similar provisions that protect against taxpayer funding of abortion. In fact, the Build Back Better Act actively strives to ensure that American tax dollars will be used to pay for abortions. U.S. Representative Congressman Chris Smith of New Jersey reminded the House of Representatives that current President Joe Biden once supported the Hyde Amendment. He said Mr. Biden once said that those of us who are opposed to abortion should not be compelled to pay for them. But this bill now forces us to pay for abortion on demand. He said in a floor speech yesterday, he said, unborn babies need the President of the United States and members of the Congress to be their friends and advocates, not powerful adversaries subsidizing their violent destruction. Well, it's not just them. Fauci's going to be injecting babies at the beginning of the year. He'll be injecting babies with, you know, genetic code injections. What's wrong with that? We'll be right back.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
All right, let's take a look at the Trump juice and its mandates. You know, going back to 1987, I want to play for you a clip of what Joe Biden said then about what was coming up in the future in terms of testing and controlling disease. Here's Joe Biden, 1987.
See, when I talked to you before about the future, it's not very far off the horizon that if we don't get one disease under control, you may find legislative bodies taking whole classes of people based upon propensity of conduct to say, we're going to put you in a certain category. We're going to demand mandatory testing for you.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that creepy? It's not only creepy how he is able to predict the future, but I thought it was also pretty creepy at how much he is enjoying this. What a cocky son of a gun he has always been. That's why I say, you know, this doddering old grandfather figure that he's become to so many people on the left, that's not what Joe Biden has been. That's not the Joe Biden that I know. That's the Joe Biden I know that you just saw there in that 1987 clip. And so I put that out when I saw it. And I had not seen this. This is something that was actually picked up and discovered by Big League Politics right as Biden put through the mandates the beginning of September. So they went back through some of the archives, and they were able to find that. I just saw it for the first time yesterday. Somebody put it on as a comment under one of the videos that I put out. And so I put that out, and I had this person comment and say, well, is he arguing against it in this case? It sounds like he's making the point to the contrary. That's right. Yeah, he's a hypocrite. That's right. I mean, just the beginning of this year, he was still against mandatory vaccines. He said, are we supposed to take him at his word or take him at his word? Which one of the words are we supposed to take him from? Because he has no integrity. He will flip-flop and change as all these people are. Anyway, so he says, it sounds like he's arguing against it. He says, be fair, even with your enemies. And I said, well, here's what it's fair to say. I said, Biden is either a hypocrite doing what he knows is wrong, or he's known for a very long time what was planned. I think it's both of these. Because we know that he was right there front and center with the first one of these germ games, Dark Winter. I said it's historical fact that he was heavily involved in Dark Winter, the prototype germ game, and that he was heavily involved in the subsequent Model State Emergency Health Powers Act, which all got kicked in this last year. But when you listen to that, what he's saying is, it's not far off on the horizon, is it? For whole classes of people, that we're going to demand mandatory testing. Now, what was the immediate context of that at the time? Well, in 1987, what he was talking about was AIDS. And what he was saying, well, based on people's conduct, you know, and again, that's their choice, right? What they wanted to engage in. And he was pushing back against the idea that we were going to do mandatory testing for AIDS. Now, this goes back to the original argument between Kerry Mullis and Fauci, because the inventor of the PCR test, who got a Nobel Prize for it, said you can't use it this way to show a link between AIDS and the virus they called HIV. He said you can't use it for that. That's an illegitimate use of this test. And if you're going to base all of this medical research and all these policies on that, you know, when Fauci said, well, I know it's a virus, we've isolated that, and now we're going to use a PCR test and we're going to magnify it to start testing for people. As soon as he said it was a virus, that's when people were saying, well, that means if it's a virus, could it be, and it's bloodborne, could it be spread by mosquitoes? Exactly how is this transmitted? Well, they didn't know, right? And with Fauci telling everybody it was a virus and saying, hey, we got a test for it, a lot of people were coming out and saying, well, we need to have force testing for this. And Biden was against that at the time. And he said, so you're going to have forced testing on people because of the choices that they make? You know, they choose to engage in this homosexual lifestyle. And so now you're going to subject them to a test. Actually, they had a correlation to the homosexual lifestyle and AIDS that is stronger than the correlation. There isn't any correlation with the unvaccinated in this, certainly compared to the people who are vaccinated. It makes no difference at all. But they're going to force us into a test. So, yeah, you could just say, well, he's just pro-LGBT, because we talked about what they're planning on doing, you know, pushing the LGBT agenda on 3- and 4-year-olds in childcare and taking away money that is being given to religious organizations to do that. Again, it just goes back. We need to set up our own society where we don't have the strings, which become chains, the financial strings attached. They become chains, take away our freedom. That's the way they always do it. That's why I said from the very beginning of this, look at the two things that were involved in this lockdown. It was a declaration of an emergency and the money that came with it. The declaration of the emergency gave them certain legal cover to do the types of things that they'd enacted with the Model State Health Emergency Powers Act, but it was more than anything, it was the money. They always do it with the money. We're going to take away money from the schools if you don't put boys in the girls' showers and dressing rooms and that type of thing. And now they're doing it to take away religious liberty. It's always about the money. If you're going to take the money from them, they're going to use it to control you. So we've got to tell them, keep your cash. I'm going to keep my integrity. Democrats treated the deadly disease like it was a matter of civil rights not to have a disclosure that someone had tested positive for HIV or that they had even full-blown AIDS, which, unlike COVID, was nearly always fatal. And the PCR test was being misused, and it was being done by Fauci. And so the logical conclusion would be that if this thing is so dangerous and Fauci says that it's a virus and we should start testing people, right? Well, he said, no, we're not going to do that because that's a violation of people's civil liberties. And yet now he is saying we are going to take away your medical informed consent. And then if we carve out an exception for you for religious exemption, now we're going to force you to test, which is what he said exactly was not what we should be having. I'll play that clip for you again.
See, when I talked to you before about the future, it's not very far off the horizon that if we don't get one disease under control, you may find legislative bodies taking whole classes of people based upon propensity of conduct to say, we're going to put you in a certain category. We're going to demand mandatory testing for you.
That's right. You're going to find certain legislative bodies that are going to do that. Or you might even just do it by health dictators. Yeah, we should just have the bureaucracy do it. Because remember, this is before they had scared everybody into the Model State Health Emergency Powers Act, which gave, with an executive order of an emergency, it gave those types of powers to these public health people at all different levels. You didn't have to have a law. You didn't have to have the legislature get involved. That's what he was talking about there. But yeah, they can just do it with a dictate. And remember, you know, the stages of this, as I said at the beginning of the program, first stage, the boosting and boasting stage. It's 100% safe, 100% effective. That was Trump. Then it's free to everybody and our heroes first. Oh, you don't want it? Well, we'll bribe you with donuts and lotteries. Next stage, stage four. We got a pass. This is your passport to life. You're not going to go anywhere or do anything unless you got this. You're going to be under house arrest. We'll let you work, though. It's okay. You can work. You can shop for groceries. Next stage is no job, no jab, no job. But we're going to do that to our heroes first. Now we're at the harassment stage where we test. Yeah, to certain people. What people? The unvaccinated that we don't like. Coming up, the fines for the true mandates. And then the prison camps. The vaccine holdouts in Austria, $4,000 fine. I guess we could call it the Gesundheit fine. Right? You got the Gesundheit pass. I showed you that yesterday. Well, you get the Gesundheit fine. And this is what they're going to be doing in Austria. That will be from February the 1st on. They will make it truly mandatory. Again, Biden has said, well, it's not a mandate, but you just wait. That's coming. Just like the people who said, well, this is not a gun ban yet, but you wait. That's coming. So the mandate will happen on February the 1st. The Austrian chancellor apologized, not to the unvaccinated people. He apologized to the vaccinated people when he did it. It's not fair for you to have to suffer under these renewed lockdown restrictions. Your enemy is not me, he's saying to everybody. Your enemy are those unvaccinated people. And yet at the same time, these people who are currently considered to be on the inside, the ones who are vaccinated, they're going to be on the outside pretty soon unless they get a third shot, a fourth shot, and so forth. That's the way it always works with these tyrants. The war on the unvaccinated is a desperate attempt to demonize and to destroy the noncompliant, writes LifeSite News. And as I showed you earlier, this symmetry, this is, you know, the red is real intense number of cases, not necessarily people sick, not people dying, but the number of cases that they've turned up November 19th, 2020, compared to November 19th, 2021. Do you see a difference there? I don't see a difference. 600 days of COVID fear of the vaccines. Not a single, not a single public health expert hailed mitigation or suppression measures, including the COVID shots. They didn't claim that's done anything significant to solve the reality that lots of people get sick during the respiratory season. And as I'm saying that, I sneeze. Well, take him away. Lock him in the FEMA camp. He just sneezed. I mean, that's become a big faux pas. You know, whenever you sneeze, you got to tell her, I'm really okay. I really am. Don't worry about that. The lockdowns failed to stop the virus. The universal masking regime failed to stop the virus. Millions and millions of social restrictions failed to stop the virus. Hundreds of millions of vaccines failed to stop the virus. Why? Is this a failure of the miraculous Trump shots? No, it was designed to fail. There is no cure for the common cold. There is not going to be any cure for a respiratory virus, and that's why they were planning on this being an annual thing, a semi-annual thing. It's why they said, you know, this will probably come in the form of a respiratory virus, what we want to do to you, as they're plotting to make their annual flu shots mandatory. But this is far beyond the annual flu shot. This is a weapon of mass destruction. It creates a toxic protein spike that literally attacks your body. This is not a weakened or dead pathogen. This is a very dangerous pathogen that they trick your body into manufacturing. So the chancellor goes on to say, it hurts. that such measures still have to be taken. Well, just wait until he gets his Nazi on, and then he's going to be bragging about it to everybody. It's not going to hurt him. He's lying. He knows it. He knows the shots will not prevent another wave of sickness, writes LifeSite News. These so-called waves are simply the reality of a seasonal respiratory effect that happens every single year, and they're going to use it for political purposes. And this is why they're biding their time. And it's why I said in 2020, I said, if we don't stop this summer, I'd been fighting it since before the lockdowns began, before the emergency order began. And then as this thing was dragging on, everybody could see it wasn't going to be 2 weeks. I said, if you don't stop this, if you continue to comply with this campaign of fear and lockdown, if you don't stop it in the summer, they are going to ramp it up again with winter. And sure enough, they did. And it's going to be an annual thing every year. The political elite pretend that they care about COVID. But it's not the virus that's keeping them up at night. It's those pesky individuals who refuse to bend the knee. And they are the ones who are in the crosshairs. So we look at this, and, you know, it's all Biden, isn't it? I just saw this on an article. A person said, yeah, Democrats are authoritarians. That's true. That's true. Boy, they just can't help it. And that's what I said. Even though it would be in their interest, and Biden's interest, to go slow. He just can't help it. It's in his nature. And he's got to ramp it up. And as I said, that creates a crisis for us. It's dangerous that he wants to go that quickly. But it's also an opportunity for us to wake people up. And then add to that all of this partisanship that we see. And people who stood by and stood down, not the Proud Boys, but I'm talking about the elected GOP officials, they stood by and they stood down because it was Trump. They didn't do anything because it was Trump. I said they will oppose this for purely partisan reasons, and now you're seeing some of that, not much. They're not going to do this for us. It's going to be up to us. But this person says Democrats are authoritarians, not Republicans, and certainly not Donald Trump. Okay. Well, let me just say again, when you look at what is happening in San Francisco, what is happening with this looting? This guy who is a Soros district attorney in San Francisco, he was raised by the Marxists Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn of the Weather Underground, when their parents, who were part of the his parents, who were part of the Weather Underground, were in prison. If you look at what's going on with that Soros DA in San Francisco, standing by and standing down, when these people are looting stores left and right. That's exactly what Trump did. Even if you don't understand the importance of the emergency declaration and the amount of money, and you say it's about the bad Democrat governors, there weren't any bad Republicans, well, that's not true. But if you say that it was only the Democrat governors that were doing this, so who gave them the money? Who stood by and did nothing to protect you? See, in that sense, Trump is worse than the Soros district attorney in San Francisco. The Soros district attorney didn't provide the thieves with getaway cars. He didn't provide them with bricks and bats and other things to break the glass. He didn't give them guns. But see, Trump did. He gave these tyrants a loaded gun. It's called a hypodermic needle. It's loaded with a toxic injection. And he let his Wall Street thugs loot Main Street far more thoroughly and more completely than anything that you've seen in any of these store attacks. That's what he did last week. And so now he's got a book, and he was on with Mark Levin, who was always an ever-Trumper when Trump was talking about actually putting America first and ending the foreign wars and things like that. Mark Levin hated him. But then when he saw what he really was, and he saw the big crowds, Mark Levin became a big cheerleader. Mark Levin has cheered Trump on with a vaccine. He's railed about the fact, you're not giving him the credit for what he did. This is great what he did. Yeah, he put out a vaccine without testing it. You should applaud this man. Biden, said Trump, has lost more people in the last year, and he has the vaccines. It's amazing. What does that tell us? You know, he continues to tell us how fantastic these vaccines were. But he's pointing out that more people died this last year with his vaccines. But it's Biden's fault. Just like when he's talking to Judge Jeanine. It's not Fauci. She says, all these people are getting fired. You got the heroes who are getting fired. And you got kids are being mandated this. Should you have fired Fauci? Because he's still there. Oh, it's not Fauci. It's Biden. So it's not his vaccines that don't work. It's not his vaccines that are killing people. It's Biden. How transparent is this? He said, they don't have a death watch with Biden. They had a death watch with me. Every day you'd see the death watch. But we did a phenomenal job, except of public relations. Well, I think he did a great job of public relations for the pharmaceutical companies that he whored for. He said, because no matter what we did, the press would not cover it fairly. We did a fantastic job. And he was there on Levin to promote his new picture book. He's got a picture book, a coffee table book. Because we don't want to have to actually write stuff. And Don Jr. says, well, he wrote the captions. That's about all he could do. Dad wrote the subtitles there. No, they're not. The vaccines are not an accomplishment. He lied us into a war, just like we were lied into the Iraq War. Except the difference is that George W. Bush didn't use the weapons of mass destruction on the American people. He just lied us into the war to kill people and to get killed. But he didn't use it against us. Now, this was always, always about corporate corruption. As a matter of fact, I have a letter here from a subscriber on Subscribestar, and by the name of Cowboy Tom. He says, I was just listening to your show, and I had a semi-original thought. After 50 years of the war on drugs, maybe it's time to declare a winner. I think the winner is Big Pharma. This one, like most other recent examples, is asymmetric. I've seen this movie enough times, I'm disappointed in myself for not realizing the simple fact that the American government, especially since World War II, has only engaged in asymmetric war, and only on behalf of some large industry or interest. An interest, in my opinion, is simply a group of shareholders and aligned industries. You know, we're talking about the military-industrial complex. We can talk about the pharmaceutical-industrial complex, the healthcare-industrial complex. You know, there's a lot of complexes, a lot of fascism, corporate fascism, the alliance and the unification of corporations with government. Anyway, he says, they seem to only operate on the behalf of some large industry or interest. Logically, the war on drugs was, or is, fought between Big Pharma and between Small Pharma, because surely they don't mean all drugs. In fact, I'd be willing to wager that Big Pharma rakes in many orders of magnitude more from their enterprises than does Small Pharma, which is the black market drugs, is what he's talking about. That's condemned by the DEA. He says, and I'm sure that they have all the most expensive minds working overtime to find new things to addict us to. And if they can't addict us, they can force us in theory. He says, what if I use the same tactics they use to own the media and politicians to mandate that you smoke a joint? I mean, marijuana has a far more proven benefits. It's science, dude. Yeah, I mean, this, you can easily prove the benefits of marijuana. But see, that's one of the key things about marijuana. We mentioned this from the very beginning. Marijuana was singled out because it was a threat to many different industries and interests. It was a threat to the paper companies. It was a threat to the textile industry. But most of all, it was a threat to the pharmaceutical industry, because medical marijuana is very, very effective. And it's not just that. Take a look at vitamin supplements. They've tried many times to outlaw vitamin supplements, and they eventually will. Or you can take a look at something else. Take a look at the opioid epidemic. They walk while people, as I've pointed out many times, El Chapo with the Sinaloa drug cartel, boy, they take everything he's got preemptively, civil asset forfeiture. But for the people, Johnson & Johnson and the Sackler family, Johnson & Johnson, they escaped pretty much cleanly out of all this, and they were set up in the vaccine industry where they have no liability for any harm that they do to anybody. So, yeah, We should understand the war on drugs was in the context of what is happening with big pharmaceutical companies today, says Cowboy Tom. Vaccine passports make absolutely no sense, some scientists, real scientists, are telling members of parliament in the UK. This story from dailyskeptic.org. Because the vaccinated are more likely to be infected. I mean, we're not talking about the fact that the same viral load and it's going to be this. No. It actually increases your likelihood of being infected. It makes little sense to impose any kind of a vaccine certification scheme, said an expert panel of scientists to a group of MPs. They said because vaccinated people over 30 years are now more likely to be infected than the unvaccinated. So it actually increases transmission for the people who are vaccinated. That's what the data says. But we don't do science based on what the data says. We're doing quote-unquote science based on what experts and people who are selling you something say. We don't care what the data says. We're going to silence the data. Co-chaired by a conservative MP and a Labor MP, this group, the Pandemic Response and Recovery All-Party Parliamentary Group, APPG, they just went for the All-Party Parliamentary Group. They say they will examine the pros and cons of such a scheme and the rationale behind it, as well as the global evidence of whether or not they work. One of the people there said, if the government wishes to infringe on our freedoms, then it must have overwhelming evidence to do so. And yet, that evidence does not exist and has not been produced, and it should not be allowed to proceed without it. I disagree. Not that they don't need evidence, but I don't really care what your evidence is. You don't infringe on our rights. If you can infringe on our rights under some circumstances, then they are not rights. They're government-granted privileges that can be suspended for whatever reason. And guess what? The number of reasons and the ways that they're going to infringe on your fundamental God-given liberties are going to increase at an exponential rate. That's what we have historically seen. You don't get a chance to infringe on our freedoms, as RFK Jr. pointed out in his book. He said, you notice that there's no clause in the Constitution that shuts the Constitution down in case there is a dangerous epidemic. Why didn't they do that? They're fond of telling everybody, well, George Washington mandated smallpox for the people coming into his army and in his army. They mandated that they get exposed to, and the way they would inoculate people back then, it was kind of a hit or miss thing. They would actually cut your skin and stick a part of a smallpox scab in there. And you could wind up getting the full thing. And many people did, and many people died. But some people got a part of it, and their immune system kicked in. And, of course, the people who got it and who had recovered from it, like George Washington had gotten smallpox when he was young, and he recovered from it. He did not die, so he had immunity. But they knew about pandemics. There were other pandemics that were happening at the same time as well. They were very familiar with pandemics. They had two of them that happened, two different ones, smallpox and another one, that happened during the Revolutionary War. So why didn't they put that in the Constitution, if that was their intention, said RFK Jr.? Well, because we don't suspend God-given rights for anything. Nothing. I don't care how much evidence you've got. But he's right. They're not looking at the evidence. We need to understand that there's always going to be a disease. And we need to understand that tyranny does not cure any disease. Not any disease. No diseases are cured by tyranny. Tyranny is a disease. It is the most virulent of all diseases. It doesn't cure any other diseases. If you have a, it's a disease. So if you get sick with smallpox, let's say, then you say, well, you know what you need? You need a good dose of tyranny. No, that's not going to fix it. Yeah, just like saying, well, you know, you get smallpox. Let's give you, let's give you tuberculosis too. That should help. No, now you've got two diseases. And so if you try to cure a disease with tyranny, now you've got two diseases, and you've just given somebody the worst possible disease you could ever have to try to get health or to get food or to have a society that works. Jen Psaki, White House press secretary, attacking Governor DeSantis because Disney ended its vaccine mandate, as I pointed out earlier. When she was asked about it, she said, well, this is a step backward. They're based in Florida. Obviously, the governor there has consistently taken steps to take steps backwards as it relates to fighting the pandemic, and not forward, she said. Well, as I pointed out, Gavin Newsom, who has gone beyond the CDC recommendations in terms of his rules and superstitions, in California, they have 16 cases, not necessarily sick, certainly not hospitalized or dying. They have 16 cases per 100,000 people, whereas in Florida, they have 7. 16 to 7. More than twice as many. But she criticizes him because this is a pandemic of politics. She said, this is not her, this is DeSantis. He says, nobody should lose their job due to heavy-handed COVID mandates, and we had a responsibility to protect the livelihoods of the people of Florida. And so Walt Disney World announced, we believe that our approach to mandatory vaccines has been the right one. We now, at this point, have more than 90% of active Florida-based cast members have already verified that they have been vaccinated. Well, what they're looking at is the fact that, as UPS has also pointed out, Biden lost in court. And the Biden administration has been telling these companies, go ahead and do it anyway. We're going to challenge it. We're going to win. You keep firing people who aren't vaccinated. But Disney and UPS would like to stay in business. And even if it's true that they were able to pressure 90% of the people into getting the vaccine with the threat of losing their job, and now they're pulling that back, do you really think that they can survive with 10% of the people gone? Those might be key people, too. That says nothing in terms of the quality of people and the training that went into that. So that's one of the reasons why they're pushing back. But again, the Biden administration says, we want you to press on. Buttigieg says the vaccine mandate for U.S. flights isn't necessary. So, you know, he's saying that maybe he's going to say they're not necessary for TSA. No, actually, he does say that they're pushing this for employees of airlines and so forth. And he says, yeah, what we're doing is working, except, again, the deadline kicks in before the Thanksgiving holiday. 40% of TSA had not been vaccinated. He says, if we're trying to get to the end of this pandemic, continuing to have the sort of loopholes to avoid a vaccine seems to elongate this pandemic, said Chris Todd when he was interviewing him this last weekend. And but he says, no, I think what we're doing is highly effective, and we're going to change this for now. Fauci says mandates for domestic air travel is not expected, quote, immediately. But it will be. It will be. We'll be right back. We'll talk about what is going on with the background and the district attorney in Waukesha, as well as a strange development in the Rittenhouse case. We'll be right back.
Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
All right, we have in the Rittenhouse case, we have an interesting turn, I think. Beyond the interview that he had with Tucker Carlson, the reactions that are happening with the left and the embrace by many people on the left of the murder that was done by this individual. Oh, it was justified. He was acting in self-defense, mocking people. It was absolutely amazing. But Kyle Rittenhouse's ex-lawyer, John Pierce, and he has a couple of Lynn Wood was also there at the same time. And he changed them out. He had Mark Richards was the attorney along with another individual who I don't know his name at the time that he won and was acquitted. But his ex-lawyer, John Pierce, has denied that they're trying to get the $2 million bail fund following a guilty verdict. And the reason I thought about this was because as I was talking about this situation with the murderer, who 2 days before he killed all these people in the Christmas parade was let out for just $1,000 bail. I said, yeah, remember that? How much bail did they have for Rittenhouse? It was $2 million. So Rittenhouse gets, who has no criminal record, this guy who has got a criminal record that is longer than your arm. I mean, somebody sent me the link to the database there in Wisconsin, where you can look up somebody's criminal record. And, you know, some of them are some civil actions that have been taken against him by people that he's hurt. But he's got, between the civil and the criminal, he's got 25 different court actions that have happened with this guy. He's got a long rap sheet, and you know, including two felonies, and it's two felonies that he was, it's a felony where he had just tried to run over somebody that he's in a relationship with a car. And so these idiots give him $1,000 bail, and they put him out on the street 2 days before he does this, and he runs over a bunch of people with a car. Same state, and Kyle Rittenhouse gets a $2 million bail. But then that brings us back to, well, now that money, since he's been acquitted, that money comes back to him, right? Well, Lynn Wood, this endlessly grifting lawyer that is out there, had filed a letter back in September. I guess he was, looking at this $2 million stack of cash. And Lynn Wood, in a September 17th letter to the Kenosha County Circuit Judge, Judge Schroeder, that presided over this, argued that the money should be returned to his foundation, the Fight Back Foundation. He said, quote, these funds were transferred by the Fight Back Foundation to the Pierce Bainbridge Law Firm's trust account and paid by attorney John Pierce on behalf of us and as an agent for the Fight Back Foundation. Accordingly, the $2 million shall be returned to the Fight Back Foundation, says Lynn Wood, if and when such funds are released consistent with the Wisconsin law and pursuant to court ruling, releasing bail money back to the individual or entity that posted the cash bail. The letter was shared by the Kyle Rittenhouse Defense Fund Twitter account, which is working with Kyle and his family. And Mark Richards, his lawyer who got him acquitted, said, looks like he's going to have to fight these guys. So in response to that, the law firm, so Linwood sets up this foundation, collects $2 million, hands it to John Pierce, lawyer, and then pays the bail money And now, you know, back in the middle of September, Linwood is saying, hey, I get that money if he wins. And so the lawyer, Pierce, evidently is trying to distance himself from that. He's by. I'm just telling you, this whole stuff around Stop the Steal, it's just unbelievable. These guys can sniff a penny from a mile away, and they will try to grab everything and steal everything that they can get. And that includes people like Ali Alexander and Alex and Roger and all of them. I mean, just the biggest bunch of crooks, include Trump in that as well. By the way, you know, I guess I should mention it now. It's all over the news everywhere that Roger and Alex have been called to testify in this, insurrection January 6th committee type of thing or whatever. They'll use that to make a lot of money, too, I guarantee you. They're going to portray themselves as the biggest victims. And all of this stuff, like Steve Bannon did, where he could say, well, I'm telling you, Biden, I'm coming for you. They're going to do the same thing. I can just, you've seen these guys. You know they're going to do that. He's going to, you know, get out there with a bullhorn and his cameraman. I'm coming for you, Biden. You can't intimidate me. Did you ever see the movie The Godfather? You know how this thing works when they call you in to testify before a congressional committee? I mean, you can go back and you can look at all the different people that have been called and held in contempt of Congress even. And that includes a lot of different people. You know, so it puts Alex Jones in the company of Henry Kissinger and other people like that. Henry Kissinger, the mentor of Steve Pachinik. You know, you've had a lot of people who have been found guilty of contempt. You had Eric Holder. You had Bill Barr. You had Lois Lerner was found in contempt of Congress because she wouldn't talk to them. It happens a lot with administration officials, but it happens a lot to people who are not part of an administration at other times. And all it requires is, if you've ever seen The Godfather, right? Michael Corleone goes in and he's sitting at the table and he decides he's going to make a statement. And so he waives his Fifth Amendment rights. You know, I refuse to testify on the grounds that it might incriminate me. And you've seen people who have gone before Congress in the past and they take the Fifth, right? And that's usually where you see the Fifth being invoked. But, you know, Tom Hayden had told him, no, we're going to just lie about this thing. And so he, under oath, decided that he would testify and told him a bunch of lies about how he didn't run the mafia or he never did any of that stuff. He's just a philanthropist or something, right? And then when they tried to convict him for it, you know, that's when he threatened the key witness implicitly with his brother's life and so forth. But going back to the legal aspects of that, once he waived the Fifth Amendment, you know, he wanted to make a statement. And so Tom Hayden was saying, wait a minute, you know, he answered your questions. Now let him make his statement, so forth. With Lois Lerner, she made a couple of statements that she wanted to make. And remember, Lois Lerner was the IRS official who was coming after, well, not coming after, but she refused to give charitable, I think it was 501c status for the charitable organizations because they were conservative. Maybe it was a different, because I don't think with a 501c you can do politics. Anyway, she was holding up a lot of organizations' particular tax status because she didn't agree with their politics. And so she was called to testify about that. She made a statement. And once she made a statement, they wanted to ask her some more questions. She said, no, I'm not going to answer those questions. I invoke the Fifth Amendment. And they said, well, you can't do that. You've already talked. You made your statement. Now you're going to have to explain it. And she wouldn't talk. And so they drew up charges saying that she was in contempt of Congress because she'd made a statement and then invoked the Fifth Amendment. You don't have to, I mean, you don't have to do what Bannon is doing and refuse to show up. You can just go there and say, I refuse to answer, take the Fifth. And just show up and not, and it all goes away. But see, Bannon and Alex and Roger, use this to grandstand and to raise money as heroes. That's what this will be used for. Anyway, I fear for my life. God is on my side. That's not Alex. That is Kyle Rittenhouse. And he's got reason to fear. He says he's now got, and he needs that $2 million back because now he's got to hire bodyguards. As a matter of fact, he's got to try to find a new identity and get somewhere anonymous. That's really the key thing that he's got to do. When he gets old enough, he can grow a beard maybe or something. I'm hoping I can live a quiet, stress-free life, he said, and be free of intimidation or harassment and just go on my life as a normal 18-year-old kid attending college. That's, I don't know what college he's going to find where the people aren't going to be attacking him. It's not going to be a liberal Marxist mob. I don't know if there's any colleges like that where he's not going to be attacked. Anyway, he says, I'm in a place now where I have to have people with me because people want to kill me because I defended myself and they're too ignorant to look at the facts of what happened. That's the sad situation that he's in right now. So I do hope that he gets that that bail money back. CBS is one of the groups of people that want to kill him. They're claiming that he crossed the state lines armed for battle. And so they're trying to lay a foundation for the... they're trying to lay a foundation for federal charges on something new and to try to come after him for that. In Waukesha, let's take a look at some of the aftermath of this. And I think at the moment, it's still five people dead, four elderly women and a middle-aged man. I think he was a priest. But the four women who died were like between 60 and 80, somewhere around there. Part of one group that was hit. It's when you look at the video, and I have, I don't suggest that you look at it because after you see it, it's something that you cannot unsee. It really is disturbing. And one of the disturbing things about it was that he kind of slows down and speeds up and turns. It's like he's picking his victims based on, I don't know, skin color? Is that what they do? It's what the media does, isn't it? They pick victims based on skin color. Besides going through the grannies, and the next thing he did was he went through a group of young kids, and there are nine kids that are in critical condition. As witnesses are saying, the car hit at least two people right away and then rolled over them. It continued down the road, which is at the end of the block, and then kept going. It didn't stop. The driver was just blowing through people, kind of like dinging a lot of people. There were bodies that were flying everywhere. There were quite a few people with broken limbs, a lot of broken legs, a lot of people shouting with broken legs. It was horrifying, said one witness. Said he and his mom ran into the crowd to help those people who were hurt. I had to go from one crumpled body to the other to find my daughter. My wife and two daughters were almost hit. Another witness reportedly said it looked as though the driver of the vehicle was, quote, trying to hit other people. Yep, he was choosing his victims. And yet, we have mainstream media saying it looks like he was fleeing a domestic disturbance. He was fleeing. I knew they were going to say something like that. That's why yesterday I showed you the preliminary shots of it where there's somebody who's shooting straight perpendicular to the road that the parade was on. And you can see the car go flying past that. And then going even faster, he nearly hits the little kid who's standing on the side dancing. He went for a very long time before he started crashing into people. Who is this guy? Well, he's got a very long criminal record, as I pointed out. He had two open felony cases. He was released on $500 bail and $1,000 bail on these various things. Again, the same state where Kyle Rittenhouse had $2 million bail. He used his own car. You can see the red SUV and some hateful, obscene rap and very bad rap, too. I mean, it's like, you know, I'm not a rap fan. I like music, and I'm with Quincy Jones on that. Quincy Jones says, hey, man, rap ain't music. It's talking. That's what rap means. It, it means talking. So I'm not a rap fan, but even if you are a rap fan, you're not going to like what he does. It showed his disturbed state, frankly, his disturbed and hateful state. But he used his own red SUV, and when they went to his, and he parked it at his house, and he parked it facing the street with a smashed up front, and he left his ID in the vehicle. This is he's accused of trying to run a woman over in a felony case. That woman was his girlfriend or whatever. But they freed him on bail twice this year. Here's how this worked out. On July 27th of 2020, he was issued two counts of second degree recklessly endangering safety and felon in possession of a firearm because he's been convicted of so many different things over history. I mean, this guy is just... Yeah, they don't have a three strikes and you're outlaw, obviously. Cash bail was originally set at $10,000 and then subsequently reduced to $7,500. That was in 2020. So fast forward from July to February of this year, the state was prepared to proceed to a scheduled jury trial. He was still in custody on this matter and previously made a demand for a speedy jury trial. So evidently he didn't have the cash to get out. $7,500. So the Soros DA is taking pity on him. Well, he doesn't have $7,500. Let's just let him out. He may be dangerous, right? Another jury trial was in progress, they said, and we can't take you right now. He says, well, I have a right to a speedy trial. So they just adjourned and they reduced the bail to $500. All right, I can do that. So it was $10,000, then $7,500, then $500. And he walks February the 21st. On November the 5th, they booked him again on charges of second-degree recklessly endangering safety, felony, bail jumping, and obstructing an officer and disorderly conduct. The state made cash, same crimes again. State made a cash bail request for $1,000. He posted that, got out 2 days before this. He's also an admitted child sex trafficker. He has, he says, well, I didn't know she was underage. And yeah, I was pimping her out, but, you know, hey, she lied to me about her age. So nine kids in critical condition, five adults dead. The woman that he tried to run over, which is why he was in jail, was the mother of his child. Why would you expect that a guy like this would care whatsoever? He is facing five counts now of intentional homicide in case nobody else dies. So I imagine now his bail will probably be $2,000. You know, he probably won't get out for anything less than $2,000. One person, a school district board member, said his daughter's dance team was the one that was struck by this guy. And again, you know, you look at it, they say it was struck by the SUV. It wasn't struck by the SUV. It was struck by a murderer using the SUV as a weapon. He said there were pom-poms and shoes and spilled hot chocolate everywhere. I had to go from one crumpled body to the other to find my daughter. But he said she wasn't hit. My two daughters and my wife were almost hit. He said, my family is safe, but many are not. I held one little girl's head in my hand. She was seizing, and she was bleeding out of her ears. I held her mother when her mother collapsed. And he tweeted this out and said, please pray. So in light of that, when you look at what these people are saying, again, so heavily embedded into this bipartisan hatred, and it is bipartisan hatred. It's hatred on both sides, irrational. We should hate when people do evil things, but we need to not be so caught up in the hatred of groups of people. You know, and that's what CRT is designed to do. It's designed to make you hate groups of people. It's the most racist thing I've ever seen in my life. As I said before, you know, even when you had the Ku Klux Klan in the South, they didn't have Ku Klux Klan classes to teach people. You know, good people didn't embrace that. But now you have, it's considered virtuous to embrace that kind of racist hatred now because they want to They want a civil war. So when you look at the reaction of the people on the left, Chuck Schumer put it out and then took it down later in the day. He said, on this World Day of Remembrance for Road Traffic Victims, we need to know we've got historic funding to help reshape our streets and to make them safer and save lives. He got a big backlash for that. He'll probably say, well, I put that out and I didn't know anything about it. Well, these are people who did know what was going on, no doubt about it. One leftist says, oh, poor white people. Oh, it's such a shame that this happened to these poor white people. Perhaps it was self-defense for the crowds. And this is the person who is doing this is a CEO. His name is Mark Feinberg. Mark Feinberg. He runs something called the Other Store, O-T-H-R Store. Very wealthy individual. He's been profiled by business magazines. Forbes profiled him. A Q&A with his company, Other Source CEO Mark Feinberg, said to Forbes, on helping the emerging food and beverage brands battle COVID-19. This is a guy who is rich, he is privileged, and he's one of the most despicable racists that I've seen on this particular topic. Poor white people, he said. He says, the problem with this is white supremacy. Maybe this guy was acting in self-defense, like Kyle Rittenhouse. He said, he was just on a rage about this. Just hating people. These children and elderly people who were run down because they were white. And this guy is on a rampage to, putting these comments somebody put up the earliest signs, the earliest videos of the SUV on the parade. He says, well, it's more or less terrible that 402 plus years of a systemic Holocaust against black people, which has killed millions. He goes on to say, quite interesting to see the amount of anti-Semitism anger that is out there. And he said, he's Jewish. So he makes this about anti-Semitism while he shows the most visceral hatred of people simply because they're white. He said the tragedy in Wisconsin is that there is a double standard of outrage. Yeah, there definitely is with him, isn't there? Until we can admit this as a nation, we won't and can't move forward. Well, this is a guy profiled again by Forbes magazine. Another person. Says white supremacy caused this. Either a white supremacist actually did this, or it was the last resort of a victim of white supremacy. As a matter of fact, what's the guy's name, Travis? Is it Sam Hyde? Sam Hyde, isn't it? Yeah, he's not. So, yeah. I got banned by Jake Tapper because Jake Tapper fell for this. He had a congressman who said, in one of these shootings or something, said, yeah, I saw it's been done by a guy. It's been identified as Sam Hyde. Well, Sam Hyde is a comedian, and as a joke, he put himself in as a suspect on some shooting a while back, and now it's become a standard thing, and other people do it and put his name out there always, every time there's some kind of a terrorist event like this. And yes, this is a terrorist event. The police there don't want to call it a terrorist event, but it is a terrorist event. And somebody, when I put that out, said, well, this isn't a terrorist event. I said, you don't think there's politics involved in this? You don't think this was inspired by politics and by fear and by anger and by terrorism? But anyway, some people actually took a picture of Sam Hyde and they blurred it like he's flying by and put it in a car. And so that's probably what this person was referring to. He said, this is a white person who did this. This is the KKK. Another person, as they tweeted out, a car just ran through the middle of downtown Waukesha parade. Multiple people on the ground injured. And this particular person, Mike Rosenberg, says the driver probably thought the parade was a threat to his life. That's the way it works in Wisconsin, isn't it? One person replied and said, this is not the time to be making jokes. And he comes back and says, trust me, I wasn't making a joke. That's right. Chris Wiggins says it's okay. The driver in Waukesha was afraid for his life and defending himself from the unarmed holiday crowd. That's Wisconsin law now. I guess maybe he missed the trial where the guy said, yeah, I had a gun, and I was pointing it at him, and I was coming at him when he shot me, right? So it's just, this is the hatred that our country has devolved into. And people have this visceral hatred for each other. They've completely, the Marxists have completely destroyed the fabric of society that holds us together. Everything that is about America, the fundamental aspects of that have all been removed. One Illinois Democrat who turns out to be, this woman's name is Mary Lemansky. She is the social media person for a Democrat Party organization in Illinois, the Democrat Party of DuPage County, Illinois. And so as a social media person, she puts out that this is karma. And also, as you said, and that's why I saw so many people say, well, I'm sure it was self-defense. It was self-defense. In other words, it was justified because I didn't get the verdict. I wanted to see a white person get executed. And because he was innocent and they found him not guilty, oh, well, I'm angry about this. She said in a post, she said, the blood of Kyle Rittenhouse's victims is on the hands of Wisconsin citizens, even the children. Well, they deserved it, according to the Democrat, Lemansky. She said, I'm sad anytime anyone dies. I just believe in karma. And this came around pretty quickly on the citizens of Wisconsin. So as a result, she's also in the past talked about on Facebook about a white wing group, not right wing, but white wing group trying to keep her from speaking at a school board meeting. And so now she has been forced to resign as social media manager, because that's a bit too far even for the Democrats to go. And some people who commented back to her said, I hope you never know the pain of losing a child. I hope the parents of those who did lose a child today in Waukesha never know you. I feel sad for both you and them. Another person said, well, I don't understand how you can be this hateful and this glib. I was going to pray for the families of those who were killed tonight, but I will add you into my prayers as well, because I think you could use some. I think we'll just leave it at that. I want to talk a little bit about some headline news in the short period of time that we've got. And I want to play this. I've had this on my desk for a couple of days. As we see this whole thing about China's hypersonic nuke, now I don't know if that is true or not. Now, China said, no, it wasn't. It was a rocket ship. It wasn't hypersonic. Well, China lies all the time. The Pentagon said, no, it was hypersonic. And boy, did, you know, we have no idea how they did that. And we are so far behind. This is a Sputnik moment, and you need to send us some cash. So I don't trust the Pentagon either. I don't know who's lying. And so now, you know, they put that out a month or two ago. So we got to kick this off. Well, nothing has been done with that. You know, they're out there spending money to destroy the roads, put speed bumps on them, and to narrow them with bicycle lanes and stuff. And, you know, the Biden administration is not too worried about defense while they're making boisterous overtures to defend Taiwan, writing checks that they ain't got the money to cash, quite frankly, in so many different ways. So this is at a forum, and I want you to hear what this guy has to say, because it's not simply about some new technology and some missile gap that we now have with a hypersonic missile. There's a renewed story that came out saying that as we saw this happening, and they said it happened back in July 27th, and they started talking about it a couple of months ago, but now they come out, since it didn't get the traction that it needed, now they're coming out and saying, well, they fired a second missile mid-flight. And so they said, while this thing was going at hypersonic speed, and it was going at 18 times the speed of sound, they said, it was able to fire another missile. How do you do that? They said. You know, because you shoot something for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. So, you know, yet that other missile kept going. It didn't slow it down, didn't stop it. So how'd they do that, they said? It tests the constraints of physics. You know, Russia has a hypersonic missile, but they say that it is Mach 7, 7 times the speed of sound. This one was 18 times the speed of sound, and it was able to fire another missile, and they have no idea. So they said Sputnik created a sense of urgency in the United States. But this July 27th test did not create that sense of urgency. I think we probably should create a sense of urgency. And so now they've got a new story. It not only was going super fast, but is also able to fire a second missile. Don't you want to give me some money now? Well, this is this is your monthly commercial for the Pentagon. But listen to what this guy says about current and existing capability. It's nothing to do with hypersonic missiles as a warning about the U.S. Getting involved in this fight with Taiwan.
Last time a United States aircraft carrier was sunk, it was the Battle of Midway, the USS Yorktown, June of 1942. We haven't lost an aircraft. Actually, we did lose an aircraft carrier last year, not a fleet carrier, a smaller carrier. Do you know why? Because it burned in San Diego Harbor, and the Navy couldn't figure out how to put out the fire, and they had to scrap the ship, the USS Bonhomme Richard. Look it up. The Navy crashed 4 ships in 2017. Read the official reports from the Department of the Navy and the congressional investigations on those crashes. They are marvels of esoteric writing to try to dodge the cause of what happened while somehow revealing it between the lines, if you can sit there with an electron microscope and read it carefully and keep yourself awake, right? If you're Taiwan and you're counting on the United States to defend you, what conclusion did you draw from Afghanistan this summer? Did you get the conclusion that here is a great power that knows what it's doing, that keeps its promises, and that can execute the things that it wants to do? Right? So getting back to the carrier point, I'll leave it at that. Forget that hypersonic missile. If you ask somebody who watches the Navy and follows the Navy, all this based on open source material, I hasten to add, they will say, plausibly, if not certainly, the Chinese have had an ability to sink a fleet carrier for the last decade at least. Right? A carrier goes out in a so-called battle group, has a number of ships ringing in and some attack submarines. All of those things are meant to protect the central asset, which is the aircraft carrier, which these days costs anywhere from $12 to $14 billion. And with the wing, that is the planes and the people, the extra people on board, there's about 6,500 people on that aircraft carrier. So $14 billion and 6,500 people. Now, 2,800 people or so died on 9/11. And remember what a psychological shock and wound to the nation that was. Imagine 6,500 people in a military defeat over something that was foreseeable in advance, and ask yourself how the nation would take it. I'm not trying to draw any conclusions about this, but I just want to take you right back to what Peter Thiel said. Right now, there seems to be a massive amount of groupthink. We're only allowed to think about this one way. Nobody is allowed to bring up any of the counterfactuals. When policy is made on that basis, horrible blunders and catastrophes result.
Yeah, but you know what we really need to focus on is let's get the military guys practicing in high heels and let's, you know, put a tranny in as admiral. That should do it. That should do it. Yeah, they couldn't even figure out how to put the fire out. But now we should shower them with money to figure out how to make a hypersonic missile. As you heard him say, this isn't about hypersonic missiles. They've had this capability for more than a decade. You have to understand, you know, when we look at the beginning of World War II, the battleship had been the thing. That was the premier thing. Boy, you had gunship diplomacy. You had a big battleship, and it was armored, and it could lob those great big shells from far out at sea. It could go anywhere. It could threaten anybody. But those things were kind of setting ducks at the beginning of World War II, as we found out at Pearl Harbor. The thing that maybe a lot of people didn't realize was that it was the aircraft carrier. That was the real thing. And so these types of things change. But because the aircraft carrier was so effective in World War II, we're still focused on that. And so, yeah, we got to have our own hypersonic missiles. I guess that'll take care of it. Meanwhile, as we look at our woke military and what they're really focused on, and oh, yeah, we've got to vaccinate people. It doesn't matter how many Navy SEALs we're going to fire. By the way, the Navy SEALs who filed an appeal about this vaccine mandate. They just had that shut down in a court. And I was going to go over the thing today, but I don't have enough time, so I'll talk about that tomorrow. Some of the arguments over there are absolutely reprehensible. And, you know, there was a it was a court. I tweeted this out yesterday. I said it was a court decision that stopped the anthrax vaccines and said, you know, this hasn't properly been vetted and you don't really have a real issue here. It's not a real threat. There is a legal precedent for these people in the military to be able to fight this vaccine on, you know, and not go through the religious exemption thing. I mean, there's no reason to have this, but that's what our military is focused on. And that's why we're so vulnerable. It's, meanwhile, remember Night at the Museum? Remember that film? You had the Teddy Roosevelt statue that was outside of the Museum of Natural History there in New York. And, you know, that was came to life, and it was Robin Williams and so forth. Well, that iconic statue is now being removed from the just the exterior of the Natural History Museum in New York City. They're going to have to send it to North Dakota to the Theodore Roosevelt Presidential Library, which is going to be opening next year. They don't have it there yet, but they're going to send that statue there because it's just become too troublesome. That statue has been there since 1940. It's been there for 81 years. But no more. Because we've got to get rid of people who have accomplished anything, people who have any integrity. They don't fit in with our society anymore. So, yeah, get rid of the Robert E. Lees, get rid of the Teddy Roosevelts. We don't want people like that in America. We don't honor people like that. Even his descendant, Teddy Roosevelt V, said, well, rather than burying a troubling work of art, we ought to learn from it, he said. Teddy Roosevelt V said, it is fitting that the statue is being relocated to a place where its composition can be recontextualized to facilitate difficult, complex, and inclusive discussions. So he's succumbed to the disease of elitist schools. It doesn't take too long. As a matter of fact, it can be done in just one generation. You can completely destroy a family where there was some sense of intelligence and honor and integrity. You can completely destroy that in a generation just by sending your kids to some school where they teach them to talk like that. Recontextualize a difficult, complex, and inclusive discussion? Come on. Come on. Yeah, he's a descendant, but only physically. He is not an intellectual or spiritual descendant of Teddy Roosevelt whatsoever. Their objection is the fact that the Teddy Roosevelt statue is mounted on a horse, you know, because he led the charge and so forth. Anyway, the Rough Riders, you know, they were riding horses. Don't expect these people to understand that. But he's on a horse. And they put beside him, I imagine they thought they were trying to be inclusive at the time. They put a black man and a Native American. And so they said, well, this implies a racial hierarchy in which Roosevelt stands higher than the other two. Let me tell you, people like Roosevelt and Robert E. Lee, these people stand so much higher than these censors and our society because we're letting them do this. Right? This is about a cultural purge. This isn't anything about whether his life was perfect or not. And as a matter of fact, they're not even criticizing in this particular thing, not even criticizing Teddy Roosevelt because, you know, it's what do you do? I mean, he didn't have slaves and, you know, he fought the monopolies and, you know, he did a lot of stuff, you know, that you can't really criticize him for. So let's criticize the statue itself. We don't like the way that looks. It sends the wrong kind of message. This is all about purging history, purging our culture. This is a Marxist agenda to purge all that. Now, they're going to take it to the Presidential Library for Teddy Roosevelt. That's going to be coming out next year. The Obama Foundation is working on their presidential library. And Jeff Bezos, in order, I guess, to appease the mob, he's just given $100 million to the Obama Foundation as a gift. No strings on how it's going to be spent. It's probably just a payoff or, you know, trying to buy protection money because he says, I would like to have this honor in some way, John Lewis. So again, I sense that this is a move by Bezos to try to head off criticism. So if he can give money to Obama, and if he can tell Obama, use this to honor John Lewis, then I guess he figures that he can head off this criticism. The Obama Presidential Center is not going to be a library, by the way, presidential library, because I don't know if Obama reads books. I mean, he, you know, he's taught by Bill Ayers. So the Obama Presidential Center is estimated to cost $830 million, and it's not going to be completed until 2025. And it's a race between the two of them. The North Dakota thing is going to be 2026, Teddy Roosevelt's presidential library, but the Obama Presidential Center doesn't have a library. It's the first presidential library not to have a library. Because there's no there, right? There's nothing there. But he's set up a foundation. And if you know anything about the Clinton Foundation, the fact that Obama has got an Obama Foundation, and he's been showered with nearly $1 billion, even before this $100 million gift from Bezos. The Clinton Foundation, as Charles Ortel, I've interviewed him multiple times. He looked at the Clinton Foundation, how it's supposed to be a charitable foundation. They've never filed any paperwork. They've never done any of that. It was just such low-hanging fruit. If Trump really was at war with Hillary, if he really was at war with the deep state, it would have been so easy to come after the Clinton Foundation. But I believe this is going to be a slush fund for Obama. I believe that's what it is. I believe what this donation is really about is a slush fund and a payoff. You know, they pay these people off after they leave office. Give me a speech and I'll give you $10,000. Now they're paying them off for what they have done before and for the influence that they can get from these people as they act as lobbyists. So we don't honor Teddy Roosevelt anymore. Instead, you've got Boris Johnson talking about his Build Back Better. See, they've all got, isn't this amazing? It's almost like they're copying each other. You know how politicians used to get really angry at each other if they would copy parts of somebody's speech, plagiarize it? If they would copy their slogan? Wait a minute, I thought of that first. I used that first. But now they're all using the same slogan that they were taught when they sat at the feet of Klaus Schwab at Davos. Got to build back better. We got the Build Back Better build. And so he's got a Build Back Better bill. And he quotes Lenin. He says, Lenin once said the communist revolution was Soviet power plus the electrification of the whole country. Well, I hesitate to quote Lenin, he said. But the coming industrial revolution is green power plus the electrification of the whole country. No, it really is Soviet power. The green power is Soviet power. See, they're both about centralized control. That's what they're about. That's what the Marxists are about. That's what Lenin was about. That's what all of this is about. You see, the central planning, it's the central planning that is really what they're talking about. It's not the economy. And as I said many times, this whole green revolution is simply a watermelon. It's a thin veneer of green, and on the inside, it's red, communist, through and through, just like a watermelon. You know, he also had the same speech. I want you to hear this guy. In case you think they're original thinkers, listen to this.
So with safer streets, with great local schools, with fantastic broadband.
He's shuffling through his papers. Oh, dear. Oh, my. When did I put this? Oh no. He's just shuffling through his paper. He has no idea what he's saying. And evidently, he can't afford a teleprompter. I don't know. He's shuffling through his papers.
People will have the confidence to stay nearer the place they grew up, to start business, and business will have the confidence to invest. And then, of course, there is one thing that business wants and that this country needs, far more than 100 supersonic rail links, far more than broadband, and that is skills. And the people
Now he's still shuffling through papers. I could go on and on, but I'm basically out of time. Yeah, if you think this guy is anything other than a technocratic puppet, come on, seriously? Just like Biden. He's saying, well, it's an economic imperative. No, it's an economic mandate. It's about central planning. That's what it is. And that's why he's quoting Lenin, because this whole technocratic takeover, this Build Back Better, we've seen it all before. We saw it 100 years ago. We know exactly what this is. It's totalitarianism. That's it for the broadcast. Thank you for listening.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.